Titles. DreamWorks Pictures and Paramount Pictures present an Amblin Entertainment production. In association with Mutual Film Company. Saving Private Ryan. Now, bright sunlight glares through the thin fabric of an American flag. In a park, a man about 70 years old shuffles along a dirt footpath. His family walks behind him. An elderly woman, a middle-aged couple, and three teenage girls. The middle-aged man quickly snaps a photograph of his father's broad-shouldered back. Other people stroll past them on the seaside path. The older man's wife sighs as she watches him walk steadily ahead. The space between them widens as her husband quickens his limping step. Dressed in a sport shirt, sky blue windbreaker, and khaki pants, he has thin gray hair and deep-set blue eyes. At a bend in the path, the man pauses and steadies himself against a tree. An offshore breeze blows into his glistening eyes. American and French flags wave high above the wind-swept trees. The old man catches his breath and moves forward, rocking with his stiff-legged gait. As he leaves the footpath and ventures onto a vast green field, a white marble cross passes our view. In front of it stands a Star of David-shaped marker. Hundreds of grave markers cover the lawn in neatly spaced rows which spread for acres across the grass. Another old man wearing a dark VFW cap stands by one of the graves, his hands folded reverently in front of him. The man in the blue windbreaker passes him. His knees splay with the force of his heavy steps. Following him between the crosses and stars, his family watches with curious stares as the old man begins to sob. He suddenly buckles into a squat.
Dad.
His son puts his arm around his heaving shoulders. From his crouched level, we see an endless line of crosses, which stand together, row by row, like white marble tunnels. Their inscriptions, carved faintly into the marble, read, Martinez, McClure. Still kneeling, the old man lifts his head and stares into the distance. With his family gathered around him, he swallows hard. We draw closer until his frosty blue eyes fill our view. His face trembles. Now, on a beachhead, X-shaped obstacles jut out of the water. Words appear, June 6, 1944. Dog Green Sector, Omaha Beach. Out at sea, landing crafts loaded with GIs bounce through heavy surf. One man vomits over the side. Another soldier's hand trembles as he unscrews his canteen. He takes a drink, and we glimpse captain's bars painted on his steel pot helmet. The captain has tight, thin lips. A greenish cast colors his tense face. He looks around uneasily at the two rows of men crammed into the small craft. A GI pukes, then another.
Clear the ramp! 30 seconds! Got me with you!
The captain barks orders.
Move fast and clear those murder holes!
His sergeant.
Want to see plenty of beef between men. Five men is a duty opportunity. One man's a waste of ammo.
Get the sand out of your weapons. Keep those actions clear. We'll see you on the beach.
Spray rains down on the troops. A boyish-faced young man carries two long steel pipes. An older man sucks in his cheeks and flinches. The men duck under the lip of the landing craft walls. A soldier discreetly blesses himself. A gaunt-faced GI wears a silver cross on his dog tag chain. He gives it a long kiss, then mouths a prayer. The craft's gate lowers. Bullets rip into the huddled men. One blows a hole through a guy's helmet. Their captain watches the two lines fall. In a fortification above the shore, unseen machine gunners riddle the landing craft. The captain shoves men over the side, out of the line of fire. Still 50 yards from the sand, they flop into the water. Their gear drags them under. A guy sinks straight down. Bullets slice bubbles through the water like torpedoes. As two GIs struggle out of their heavy packs, red clouds fill the water and they sink. Another struggling soldier gapes, stiffens, then stills. Troops try to run on the ocean bottom. At the obstacles, dead men lie across the steel X's. Other troops take cover behind them. The captain drags a private along through the shallows. Reaching a steel X-shaped barricade, he pulls the soldier close. A bullet hits the private's heart. The captain holds onto him against the surf. Letting him go, the captain wades across to another obstacle. More soldiers jog onto shore. In the machine gunner's fortification, the Germans mow down GIs on the beach. An explosion shoots up a column of sandy mud. Bodies fall from 20 feet in the air. New troops keep coming, slogging through waist-high waves. They hold their rifles above the water and race past men lying dead on the sand. Past the tide line, braced logs like telephone poles slant toward the sea. GIs take positions around them as the German machine gunner cuts down another unloading company. The captain stumbles in the blood-stained water. On shore, an explosion rips off a man's leg. The captain creeps forward on his elbows, stumbles, then crawls to safety behind an obstacle. Trembling, he grits his teeth. A few feet away, a terrified private covers his face. Other men's gear lies scattered around him. The captain's pale face freezes in a glare. A flamethrower's pack explodes. Fire swallows him and two other men. Splashed with red rain, the captain flinches. The bloody water streaks down his cheeks. A soldier with a shredded arm stump searches the ground. Finding his arm still in its sleeve, he carries it up the beach. A landing craft to the captain's left sits engulfed in flames. Men race off the ramp. A guy on fire throws himself in the surf. The captain finds his helmet in the sand and picks it up with his trembling hand. As he puts it on, water and blood run into his eyes. A boy stands in front of him, shouting, "What now, sir?" He sees his sergeant.
Dan Miller! Sergeant Horvath! Move your men off the beach! Go!
Waist deep in the surf, a half dozen men wearing Ranger insignia follow Sergeant Horvath and Captain Miller. They cluster behind the obstacles. Miller and a few others dash into the German sights. Behind the obstacles, a radio man makes a call. A medic bends over downed men. In the open, a guy holds his spilled guts.
Mama! Mama!
Miller clutches a rifle wrapped in a clear bag. A few yards up the beach, he finds another company. One guy holds a clunky black typewriter.
What are you guys?
104th Medical Battalion, sir! Here to set up field operations!
Get rid of that crap! Grab yourself some weapons! Follow me!
A lieutenant gapes at his blood-covered hand.
Ah!
Miller runs up to him. Dead fish lie around Briggs, who writhes on his back. Miller rolls him onto his side.
I'm hit low!
Grabbing Briggs' pack, Miller drags the wounded man along. A shell explodes inches away and knocks Miller on his face. Scrambling to his feet, he hauls Briggs by the pack. Only half of Briggs is left. Miller trips, looks back, and sees Briggs' remains. Gripping his bag-wrapped rifle, he gets to his feet and runs up the beach with men following. Soldiers carrying steel pipes and flamethrowers race by. Sand clods fall like hailstones around them. Through the gun smoke, we make out the machine gunner's two-story-high bunker just 50 feet ahead. GIs dive against a shallow sand dune rigged with barbed wire. We stare down the German machine gun's barrel at the troops dying below. Miller hits dune cover and grabs a radio man by the arm.
Shore party! No armor has made it ashore. We got no DD pipes on the beach. Dog one is not open!
He turns away.
Who's in command here? You are, sir!
Miller sees Horvath down the line.
Sergeant Horvath! Sir! You recognize where we are?
Wherever we're supposed to be, but no one else is!
Come on, you where they're supposed to be!
Miller rolls to the radio man.
Shore party! First wave, ineffective! We do not hold the beach, say again! We do not hold the beach!
We're all mixed up, sir! We got the leftovers from Fox Company, Able Company, and George Company!
Horvath shoulder rolls over the line of men along the dune to Miller. Miller grabs the radio man and finds his face cratered in.
Shore party!
He pushes the body away and takes the radio.
Get aft!
The radio's all shot up. More GIs dive onto the dune.
I'm in here, sir! Need anybody else?
Jackson, but that's about it!
Miller's here! Caparzo! We got DeForest back there with Wade! He's hurt so bad he's dead! He's sprung 100 links! Wade says he's all used up!
Move on to somebody you can help!
Let's go! You battalion sergeant, sir!
Miller's medic, Wade, works on DeForest, back at the dune.
Get in the kitchen! Wade!
Yo, Doc!
Wade!
Wade wears a red cross painted on his helmet. Rolling a body around DeForest, he shields him from bullets.
Wade!
All right, get him off the beach!
I got it! We stopped the bleeding!
A bullet pierces DeForest's helmet. Wade hurls a compress.
Just give us a fucking chance, you son of a bitch!
Wade!
Son of a... Come on!
Wade! Wade, it's Mellish!
Mellish drags Wade off, leaving DeForest in a pool of blood. Reaching the dune, Wade sobs uncontrollably.
This is all that's made it?
Scattered pretty bad, so there's bound to be more of them.
Not enough. Not enough.
Dog one exit. That's got to be that cut on the right, or is it the one on the left?
No. Deerville is to the west of us. This is dog one.
They're killing us! And we don't have a fucking chance, and that ain't fair!
Gather weapons and ammo!
A shell lands on a dune nearby and bodies fly. Men scramble back onto the beach. One guy pulls an ammo belt off a man with one leg. At the dune, Sergeant Horvath talks to a private first class.
Right. Hey, right. Where's your VAR?
Bottom of the channel, Sergeant. Could try to drown me.
Find a replacement.
The rifleman Ripon scurries off.
Bangalores! Bring up some Bangalores!
Guys run up with sections of pipe 6 feet long. Scrambling past the troops pressed against the dune, they pass Captain Miller.
Bangalore's on the line!
Heads up! Fire's coming your way!
The gaunt-faced, cross-wearing GI joins the line.
Jackson here, sir!
Ripon bangs an ammo clip on his helmet, then fits it into his automatic rifle. A few feet away, Miller helps slide banger pipes over the dune. Jackson steadies himself against the sand and takes several deep breaths through his hawkish nose. Elsewhere, the young medic Wade clamps a man's spouting arm.
I got it in! I'm gonna die! My God, Jesus!
On the line, a bullet ricochets off a guy's helmet. He takes it off.
Come on.
Lucky bastard.
A bullet nails him.
Move it. Keep him moving. You got it?
You're not gonna die. You're fine. Don't look at it.
Bangalores! Clear the shingle!
Fire in the hole!
They light the fuses in the banger pipes and slide them over the top. The barbed wire bursts apart. Sand sprays everywhere. Horvath peeks over.
We're in business, definitely! Other side of the hole!
The men charge forward. Bullets burst in the sand around them as they hustle over. Wade jabs his wounded man with a tiny vial, then scoots along at ground level behind a medical officer.
Let's go!
They crawl to a guy spitting blood.
Expectant morphine.
Another holds his gut. The doctor looks at Wade.
Routine.
Beside him, another gasps for air.
Priority.
He feels the next one's wrist.
He's gone.
Miller's squad reaches the base of the gunner's bunker. Gunners from a sandbag nest on a nearby ridge fire at them. Miller ducks back and crashes against Horvath. Mellish squeezes in beside both of them.
Fuck, I can't move.
Mellish,
this is
your bayonet.
Miller gets a mirror from his inside pocket and takes Mellish's bayonet. He reaches into the private's mouth, pulls out a wad of gum, and sticks it on the bayonet tip. Miller clamps the mirror on with the gum and holds the makeshift periscope out from the wall for a clear view of the gunner's nest.
Two MG-42s, two mortars, that 20, left 30.
With his cheek full of tobacco, Horvath takes a look.
It's a little deflate over there, but it's a perfect fire position if we get some goddamn armor on the beach.
Not open up.
Oh, we gotta get this draw open. Ryman, Mellish, let's get into the war. Grab some cover and put some fire on that crew.
Yes,
Davis, DiBernardo, Young, Paul, get ready. Covering fire!
Miller's Rangers fire into the open, covering the four soldiers as they run. Caparzo's thick neck bulges as he grits his teeth and shoots. Miller watches with his mirror.
Firing squad.
It's the only way we can get everybody the hell out of here. Short, Peyton, McDonald, Parks, you're next!
Just had a blindfold gap.
All we can do is die! Covering fire!
Miller and Horvath rise to their knees, shoot at the gunner's nest, then drop back down.
Come on!
The next group of four takes off.
God damn it!
Ryben squeezes the trigger on his Browning automatic. Caparzo's spent clip hops up out of the breach. Miller holds out the mirror.
Jackson.
Sir. You see that impact crater?
Yes, sir.
That should give you complete defilade from that machine gun position. Get in there and give me some fire discipline.
Wait for my command.
Jackson fishes out his dog tags and kisses his cross. Miller swings out into the open.
No!
Miller ducks. Horvath gives covering fire while Jackson runs. The German gunners pepper the sand with bullets. Jackson dives and rolls into a crater.
Captain, if your mother saw you do that, she'd be very upset.
I thought you were my mother.
In the crater, Jackson stares coolly through his rifle's scope. He shoots a German gunner. On the beach.
Oh my God, I'm heartily sorry for having offended thee.
An army chaplain lies close to a bareheaded soldier. Rosary beads drape over the young man's arm. Another man prays somewhere else.
All my strength. Haste thee to help me.
Jackson blows a hole in the sandbag nest. As Germans tumble down the cliff, Miller's Rangers stand and fire. A German falls a few feet away, blood streaming from his mouth.
Dog one, exit! Right here!
Horvath throws out his tobacco wad and heads forward. The Rangers follow with Miller behind. In a sandbag trench leading up the hill, a bullet knocks a man between the shoulders. His blood splashes as he falls. The enemy fires from behind a sand embankment just 2 yards away. German reinforcements run up behind their comrades, and GIs shoot them down as they race past. Miller and Horvath charge up the hill behind the concrete bunker and sweep along its sunken trench. Horvath, Jackson, Caparzo, and Mellish crouch behind the rear wall painted with swastika graffiti. Ryben unclips a grenade and flips it to Horvath and pitches it into the bunker trench. As the debris settles, Caparzo and Mellish sweep the trench, rifles aimed, and sidestep toward the bunker door. A German runs out. Mellish kills him. Poised on the lip of the trench, he aims at the door again. They take the next two down. The Rangers jump into the trench. Doyle wields a flamethrower. The others cover as Horvath tosses another grenade in the doorway. Doyle shoots flames into the bunker tower. Fire leaps out of the shooting slot in front.
Don't shoot! Let him burn!
Men in flames dive out of the bunker onto the beach. In the dog green exit leading uphill, a GI's face blows apart. Guys charge past him into the firing line. Suddenly, a German soldier stands up with his empty hands raised. As others surrender, a Ranger shoots him. While some of the GIs capture prisoners, others race left, where a dugout is under attack. At the top of the beach cliffs, a skirmish sends Germans into an escape trench. GIs swarm along the top of it and shoot them down. Others cut off the escape at the other end. Dozens of GIs stand over the open pit and gun the Germans down. Horvath waves his hand, palm out, in front of his face. Miller shouts into a hand radio.
Sugar Cane, Sugar Charlie 3, say again, dog 1 is open.
Behind them all, two Germans throw down their weapons and raise their arms. Two Americans stalk toward them with rifles raised.
What?
I'm sorry, I can't understand what you're saying.
They gun down the Germans, then run up to the fallen bodies.
What'd he say? What'd he say?
Look, I washed for supper.
A corporal laughs and searches the dead man's pockets. Miller looks on with a dull-eyed stare. Over by the escape trench, Caparzo searches the dead Germans.
Hey, Fish.
Yeah.
Look at this, a Hitler Youth knife.
Mellish takes the knife.
And now it's a Shabbat holocaust, right?
Mellish suddenly drops to the ground and quakes with sobs. Down in the trench, Caparzo discreetly looks away. Mellish holds onto his helmet, then shifts the knife from hand to hand. His lips draw back tightly, showing his teeth as he anxiously fingers his helmet. Sergeant Horvath scoops dirt into a round fist-sized tin, then clamps on a lid labeled France. He stores it in his pack with other tins labeled Africa and Italy. Horvath's silver wedding ring gleams on his dirty hands. The scruffy-faced sergeant heaves a sigh. Next to him, Miller tries to steady his trembling right hand. He unscrews his canteen and takes a long drink. He tips back his helmet, painted with two stark white captain's bars.
That's quite a view.
Yes, it is. Quite a view.
Miller's face draws closer until his blue-gray eyes fill our view. His face trembles as he looks out on the English Channel. On the beach, blood-red waves slosh against bodies strewn along the pulsing surf. Face down in the water, the dead soldiers are a mass of netted helmets, boots, and entrenching tools. The gentle surf bangs an ammo box against floating lifeless bodies. The bright red water washes around men's boots and collects in a rivulet worn into the sand. Flat silvery fish lie among the corpses and scattered equipment. Our view glides over one man lying dead on the tide line. As we draw closer, a stenciled name on his pack comes into view. Ryan S. Now women's faces appear, some with tear-glazed eyes. In a sunlit office building, clerks work at desks arranged in orderly rows. One woman types a letter, then places it in an outbox on top of others.
Dear Mr. Brian Boyd, no doubt by now you have received full information about the untimely death of your son.
No words of mine can ever relieve the grief that you have felt his loss tremendously.
He was a fine soldier, and he believed very strongly in what...
It's no secret anymore that we were involved in one of the most important operations of this war.
Hal was the one who held us all together.
A supervisor wearing bifocals and short-sleeved dress leafs through a stack of letters. Pulling one from the middle, she holds it up beside a second letter and frowns pensively.
Which we all cherish and hold so dear. The loss of Lee and others like him.
She stands and walks across the rows to a younger woman's desk where she opens a leather portfolio. Removing a sheet of paper, she looks it over and compares it to the other two. Her lips move silently. The supervisor strides briskly down a wide center aisle between the desks. Her speedy gait blows back the papers in her hand. Entering a glass-enclosed office, she shows the letters to an army lieutenant who quickly reads them. She says a few urgent words to the young lieutenant, then follows him as he steps through the door. The two cross the typing pool again and enter another room with a captain's name on the door. Later, the captain and lieutenant report to a colonel who wears one empty sleeve of his uniform pinned up.
Colonel, I've got something you should know about.
Yes?
He takes the letters from a folder.
These two men died in Normandy. This one at Omaha Beach.
Sean Ryan.
This man at Utah.
Peter Ryan.
The captain hands over the third letter.
This man was killed last week in New Guinea.
Daniel. Ryan.
The three men are brothers, sir. I've just learned that this afternoon their mother's going to be getting all three telegrams.
The colonel slowly takes his seat.
That's not all. There's a fourth brother, the youngest. He parachuted in with the 101st Airborne night before the invasion. He's somewhere in Normandy. We don't know where.
Is he alive?
We don't know.
The colonel stacks the letters with his one hand.
Come with me.
Now, on wide, golden-brown farmland, a white house and a weathered barn stand against a leaden-gray sky. A military staff car churns up dust on a gravel road. In the house, a woman washes dishes in the kitchen sink. A small red-and-white banner bearing four blue stars hangs in the window. Mrs. Ryan wipes a dish with her bare hand and sets it aside to dry. She glances up with an absent gaze, then back to her chore. Stiffening, she slowly lifts her head again. As she pulls down the window's sheer lace valance, the staff car comes into view. It climbs a gentle hill between the golden crop fields. Mrs. Ryan replaces the valance and walks out of the kitchen. Opening the front door, she hesitates behind the screen. In the dim hallway, a photograph shows four men in infantry uniforms, their arms around each other's shoulders. As Mrs. Ryan shuffles unsteadily onto the porch, the staff car pulls to a stop in front of the house. An army officer and a chaplain climb out. They both remove their hats. Mrs. Ryan teeters, then sinks, sitting on the bare porch boards. Back at the War Department, words appear. General George C. Marshall, United States Army Chief of Staff.
Damn it.
All four of them were in the same company in the 29th Division, but we split them up after the Sullivan brothers died on the Juno.
Any contact with the fourth son, James?
No, sir. He was dropped about 15 miles inland near Neuville, but that's still deep behind German lines.
Mac, there is no way you can know where in the hell he was dropped. General, first reports out of Ike's people at Shafe said the 101st is scattered all to hell and gone. There's misdrops all over Normandy. Now, assuming Private Ryan even survived the jump, he could be anywhere. In fact, he's probably KIA. And frankly, sir, we go sending some sort of rescue mission, flat-hatting throughout swarms of German reinforcements all along our axis of advance. They're going to be KIA, too.
Holding the Ryan letters, the general shifts from foot to foot. He beckons to the officers, who follow him across the large room to a desk by the window. He strides to a telephone table and removes a book from a drawer. General Marshall takes a letter from between its pages.
I have a letter here, written a long time ago to a Mrs. Bixby in Boston. So bear with me.
He reads the handwritten letter.
Dear Madam, I have been shown in the files of the War Department a statement of the Adjutant General of Massachusetts that you are the mother of five sons who have died gloriously on the field of battle. I feel how weak and fruitless must be any words of mine that would attempt to beguile you from the grief of a loss so overwhelming. But I cannot refrain from tendering to you the consolation that may be found in the thanks of the Republic they died to save.
Looking up, the general continues from memory.
I pray that our Heavenly Father may assuage the anguish of your bereavement and leave you only the cherished memory of the loved and lost. The solemn pride that must be yours to have laid so costly a sacrifice upon the altar of freedom. Yours very sincerely and respectfully, Abraham Lincoln.
The War Department colonel watches the general with an uncertain gaze. The captain and another colonel look on somberly as the general presses the antique letter between the pages of his book. General Marshall leans back in his chair.
The boy's alive. We are going to send somebody to find him. And we are going to get him the hell out of there.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Now in France, American troops travel a dusty road. Some march in loose formation, while others ride on the backs of open bed trucks. Words appear. Omaha Beach, D-Day plus three.
Miller Charlie Company.
Go on in, Captain.
Miller salutes an officer wearing oak leaf insignia. The lieutenant colonel returns the salute and continues talking on a field telephone. Miller glances around the makeshift command office. A GI shaves with steaming hot water. Another pours coffee.
Yes, sir.
Miller spots a pile of thick meat sandwiches. The lieutenant colonel steps up.
Airborne was supposed to win an open door for the rest of us. Instead, they misdrapped, scattered all their sticks into the wind. What's your situation?
Yes, sir. Sector 4 is secure.
They look at a map.
We took out towed 88s here, here, and here. They'd already gotten four of our Shermans and a number of our deuce and a halves. These two minefields are actually one big one. We tried to make our way up through the middle of it, but it turned into a mixed high-density field,
a little bit of everything. Spring mine 44s, shoe mine 42s, pot mines, A200s, the little wooden bastards that the mine detectors don't pick up.
This road here, they placed big mushrooms, Tellermine 43s, I guess for our tanks, from here right up to the edge of the village, right here. So we marked them, called the engineers.
Resistance?
We had higher support expectations, sir. There was an understrength company with that artillery, Wehrmacht, 346th Infantry, von Luckkampfgruppe. We ended up with 23 prisoners. We turned them over to MPs from the 29th.
The lieutenant colonel paces around Miller.
What about our casualties?
Well, the figures were 35 dead times two wounded. You just didn't want to give up those 88s.
It was a tough assignment. That's why you got it.
Yes, sir.
Miller stares vacantly.
John. I've got another one for you.
Yes, sir.
This one's straight from the top.
Later, as Miller walks along with Horvath, more troops stream into camp.
I wish. You and I are taking a squad over to Newville on a public relations mission.
Boy, you leading a squad?
Some private in the 101st lost three brothers and he's got a ticket home.
How come Newville?
Yeah, I think he's up there somewhere, part of all those airborne misdrops.
It's not going to be easy finding one particular soldier in the middle of this whole goddamn road.
Pointing a needle in a stack of needles.
But what about the company?
We take the pick of the litter and the rest get folded into Baker.
Jesus Christ. They took away your company?
It wasn't my company. It was the Army, so they told me anyway. Could be arriving on BAR, Jackson, Wade, Beasley, and Caparzo.
Beasley's dead.
All right, Mellish then. We got anybody who speaks French?
Not that I know of.
They reached their men.
What about Talbot?
This morning.
Oh. All right. I'm going to go try to dig up another interpreter, the symbol of Italian motor pool on the beach.
Yes, sir. Okay, listen up. What?
What are we
going to
do?
You're going home wrapped in American flag with a hunk of cheese in your ass, Caparzo, you smart ass. Now listen up.
You liked it in the ass.
What?
I thought you liked it in the ass.
Attention!
Miller at a mapping station.
I'm looking for Corporal Upham.
Yes, sir.
Timothy E.
I'm Upham, sir.
I understand you speak French and German?
Yes, sir.
How's your accent?
It's just a slight one in French, but my German's clean, has a touch of the Bavarian, sir.
Very good. You've been reassigned to me. Grab your gear. I'm going to a place called Newville.
Upham gets his gear, and Miller steps over to a cartographer's table. Upham tries getting Miller's attention.
Two axes of advance south.
Sir, there are Germans.
There are artillery in here, sir.
I understand, Corporal.
Yes, so there are a lot of Germans in Newville.
You have a problem with that, Corporal?
No, sir. Just if you consider I've never been in combat, sir. I make maps and I translate. And that's...
I need someone who speaks French and German.
Yes, sir.
My two guys were killed.
Yes, sir. It's just that I haven't held a weapon since basic training, sir.
Did you fire the weapon in basic training?
Yes, sir.
Well, then get your gear.
Yes, sir.
Upham, a skinny young man with a pale face, knocks over helmets and a portable typewriter. He clumsily bobbles his gear.
May I bring my typewriter, sir?
Narrowing his eyes, Miller holds up a stubby pencil.
Yes, sir.
Upham grabs one of the scattered helmets and scurries up to Miller.
Very much.
Is that a souvenir?
It's a German helmet.
Take your time, Cole.
Upham runs back to the shelf, gets his helmet, and falls in with Miller.
You should look on the bright side of things, Corporal.
Yes.
For one thing, you don't need to carry those. You'll need that.
Miller throws down the typewriter into duffel, and the two walk back across camp. The U.S. Army sprawls across the bluffs overlooking the channel. Lines of troops move in all directions, and jeeps climb the steep hills. The men wear steel helmets, olive-green field jackets, and canvas gaiters over their leather boots. Above the water, barrage balloons hang in the hazy white sky. Later, on an inland meadow, Miller's small squad climbs a hill. Silhouetted against low-hanging clouds, the seven men follow Miller in a spread-out V formation. Later, a flock of sheep bounces by them through the deep, lush grass. At the rear of the squad, Upham trots up behind Mellish and gives him a friendly tap on the shoulder.
Hey, you want your head blown off, you fancy little fuck? Don't you ever fucking touch me with those little rat claws again. Get the fuck back in formation.
Upham smiles nervously.
Just wondering where you're from.
Ahead of them, the burly Caparzo smokes a cigarette. Upham catches up to him and squints.
Caparzo? Is it,
Hey, drop dead, Corporal.
Gotcha.
And another thing, every time you salute the captain, you make him a target for the Germans.
Understood.
So do us a favor, don't do it. Especially when I'm standing next to him, capiche? Hey.
The medic, Wade.
Corporal, what's your book about?
Hey, what's your rifle? Actually, it's supposed to be about the bond of brotherhood that developed between soldiers during war.
Brotherhood? What do you know about brotherhood? Get a load of this guy, fish. Why don't you ask the captain where he's from?
Mellish smirks.
Yeah, ask the captain. I'll tell you everything you want to know about him.
Ryben to Miller.
You want to explain the math of this to me? I mean, where's the sense of risking the lives of the eight of us to save one guy?
20 degrees. Anybody want to answer that?
Driving. Think about the poor bastard's mother.
Hey, Doc, I got a mother, all right? I mean, you got a mother. Sarge's got a mother. I mean, shit, I bet even the captain's got a mother. Well, maybe not the captain, but the rest of us got mothers.
There's not a reason why there's but to do and die.
What the fuck is that supposed to mean, Corporal, huh? We're all supposed to die, is that it?
Upham's talking about our duty as soldiers.
Yes, sir.
We all have orders and we have to follow them. That supersedes everything, including your mother's.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. Even if you think the mission's FUBAR, sir?
Especially if you think the mission's FUBAR.
What's FUBAR? Oh, it's German.
Yeah. Never heard of that.
Sir, I have an opinion on this matter.
Jackson, the sniper.
By all means, share it with the squad.
Over my way, thank you, sir. This entire mission is a serious misallocation of valuable military resources.
Go on.
Well, it seems to me, sir, that God gave me a special gift, made me a fine instrument of warfare.
Riven, pay attention now. This is the way to gripe. Continue, Jackson.
Well, what I mean by that, sir, is you used to put me in this here sniper rifle anywhere up to and including 1 mile of Adolf Hitler with a clear line of sight, sir. Pack your bags, fellas. War's over. Amen.
Oh, that's brilliant, Bumpkin. Hey, so, Captain, what about you? I mean, you don't gripe at all?
I don't gripe to you, Riven. I'm a captain. It's a chain of command. Gripes go up, not down, always up. You gripe to me, I gripe to my superior officer, so on, so on, so on. I don't gripe to you. I don't gripe in front of you. You should know that as a Ranger.
I'm sorry, sir, but let's say you weren't a captain, or maybe I was a major. What would you say then?
Well, in that case, I say this is an excellent mission, sir, with an extremely valuable objective, sir. Worthy of my best efforts, sir. Moreover, I feel heartfelt sorrow for the mother of Private James Ryan. I'm willing to lay down my life and the lives of my men, especially you, Ryan, to ease her suffering.
He's good.
I love him.
Mellish and Caparzo blow kisses at each other. Upham smiles slightly and quickens his pace to keep up. The squad spreads out in a thicket of high brush. Later, it begins to rain. Fat, heavy drops spread ripples in a pond, and broad leaves darken with a spatter as the downpour increases. A mud puddle percolates with raindrops, then combat boots splash through it. Miller's squad charges at a full run toward a bombed-out wall on the edge of a town. Crouching behind a gate, Miller yells out as civilians run by in the rain.
Thunder!
Flash!
Upham, over there. Ryben, you four, go.
Ryben, Caparzo, Upham, and Wade jog into the town and press themselves against a building. The figures of other GIs are faintly visible through the sheets of rain. Miller spots a sergeant wearing the airborne eagle patch.
You guys inside the sore eyes.
Sergeant Hiller, relief showed up.
How many are you?
Just eight of us. We're not your relief.
Huh.
Sorry.
What do you mean, sir?
We're here for a Private Ryan.
Who? Ryan? What for?
Is he here?
Well, I don't know. Maybe with a mixed unit on the other side of town.
Uh-huh.
It's hard to get through. The Germans punched a hole in our center a few hours ago. They cut us right in two. What's his name again?
Ryan. James Ryan. He dropped in with 101st.
Come and give me a runner up here. Runner!
The sergeant, Hill, takes Miller to another wall, 50 feet farther into town. They crouch beside a hole blasted through the stones.
We got stopped by some intense rifle action from the eastward. The Germans have been reinforcing two regiments all day. Streets have been quiet for about 45 minutes. Most of the German fire now is concentrated to the westward.
Who's that on the loudspeaker?
That's Dagger Dusseldorf, our friendly neighborhood morale officer.
The Statue of Liberty is kaput. That's disconcerting.
Miller squats beside Caparzo with his back against a broken wagon wheel.
Take the second one.
Your father was circumcised by my rabbi, you prick!
Caparzo picks through apples spilled on the ground.
Got that? Cover!
Caparzo inches out from his cover to get an apple. Hill's runner dashes into the open. After about 20 steps, the Germans cut him down. Suddenly alert, Caparzo tries to aim through the wagon wheel. He bounds over to the wall and kneels down behind the captain. As Caparzo stands up for a look, the Germans riddle the runner's body with bullets. Miller yanks Caparzo down.
When that in direct contact, they single out the runners.
Yeah, but why do they keep shooting him up like that?
As long as his lungs have breath in him, he still carries the message. We do the same thing.
No, we wouldn't!
Wade! Get him ready to travel.
Yes, sir.
Wade rushes off.
Try again. See if you can let Captain Hamill know we're coming.
What's the rest of Newville look like?
Eagle 4
next
forward.
Next block's got two
Eagle
story buildings, both
forward.
Sides of the street. There's
Bear
a lot of windows.
Copy, over.
And then there's a wide open square with pretty good cover on the left.
Show me. Sarge, yes. Hold right here.
Yes, sir.
Soaking wet, Hill, Miller, and a radio man head for the town square.
All right, let's get out of this infilade. Use the buildings. Try a left hook. Shoot and scoot. Two of yours, two of mine.
Hey, Miller beckons, and his squad runs forward.
Driving Caparzo.
On the middle.
Short runs. High and low at the corners. It's going to be tight. Be prepared for close contact. Go. Up them.
Yes,
you stay with Sergeant Horvath.
Stay right here. Now, where are my gun to work, Captain?
Upham clings to the sergeant. Hill takes the ranger squad to the edge of the rubble-strewn square.
All right, pass the end of the block to the left. Those are the gates to the square.
Good.
Ryben drops to one knee, carrying his 4-foot-long automatic rifle. Upham squats beside it.
Ryben, where's the captain from?
You figure that one out, you got yourself a nice prize.
$300 last I heard.
Company's got a pool. $5 gets you in.
Wade struggles past Miller with an injured man who uses his rifle as a crutch.
Around this corner, death laid right up to those gates.
Upham, with Ryben and Horvath.
Somebody must know where he's from, what he did for a living.
I've been with him since Kasserine Pass. I don't have a clue.
The paratrooper Hill limps along.
I need a wheelchair before this war is over. Oh, that's it. Oh, my God. My neck looks like an old woman. Like an old... Oh,
Miller follows, then Hill's men, then Miller's.
Riven, so you even know where he went to school?
Captain didn't go to school. They assembled him at OCS out of spare body parts and dead GIs.
You gotta pay attention to detail. I know exactly where he's from and exactly what he did because I pay attention to detail.
Hey, help him. Kelpie, don't step in the bullshit.
The GIs make it to a broken stone wall. Horvath calls out.
Do it.
Thunder! Thunder, and we will fire on you!
Falling back, Miller peeks around the other end of the wall and sees a civilian family huddled inside an apartment building with a wall completely gone.
Papa, tell them to show themselves.
What can't move? What can't move?
The rangers pour around to the back of the building. On an upper story, a woman holds an infant and stands behind her husband.
Ask them if they know where the Germans are.
Où sont les Allemands?
Ça va pas. Ils sont partout. Vous êtes passés par Valogne. Il faut que vous emmeniez les enfants.
What's the thing about the children?
Kids!
They want us to take the children.
No, we can't take the kids.
While Miller and Upham wave the couple off, Caparzo inches up a mound of rubble. A boy comes out of hiding. Then the Frenchman lowers his daughter down to Caparzo. Horvath gapes.
Are you nuts? Listen to the captain!
With his helmet off, Caparzo takes the 8-year-old girl in his arms and hands her his rosary beads. She reaches for her father.
Caparzo! Put that little girl back! Caparzo, give that kid back!
Caparzo carries her down.
How do you say it's okay? I can't. She reminds me of my niece, sir.
Caparzo, get the kid back up there.
Captain, the decent thing to do is to at least take her down the road to the next town.
We're not here to do the decent thing. We're here to follow fucking orders.
As Miller takes the girl, Caparzo gets shot in the chest. Miller, Horvath, and the French girl take cover behind an abandoned car. Caparzo seizes, and he falls on the ground in the open square. Jackson pulls up him over to the car.
God damn it! Where'd that come from?
He was on the ground before we heard the shot.
Jackson looks through the driving rain at a church's bell tower overlooking the rubble.
That's rad, B.
Miller squints.
I didn't see it. 450 yards, Cap, maybe shade under.
I wouldn't venture out there, fellas. This sniper's got talent.
In the exposed apartment, the French family clings together. Corporal Upham strokes the sobbing girl's hair. Jackson fixes a scope onto his rifle and creeps around the car.
Coffee.
Catching Caparzo's eye, Jackson signals for silence. The burly private lies on his back and sputters as water splashes his face.
Yes.
Hold on, Caparzo.
His blood trails onto the ground.
Help me up, I can walk.
Caparzo, stay still!
Jackson moves beyond the car, where a heap of rubble forms an embankment. He looks over it at the bell tower, then adjusts his rifle scope. Caparzo's full pack props him up awkwardly above the mud.
Get up! Can you see him from there? How is he?
Wade, you stay put!
Where's he shot, Captain?
Wade half stands.
Captain, can you see him from there?
You stay there!
Damn it, stay down! With you.
I'm
gonna take care of you if you get hit, huh?
Ash, come over here.
Copy, put the head down. I can't put the head down.
Caparzo's shaved head bobs up and down, half a foot above the street. Reaching into his jacket, he pulls out a letter.
Oh my God, I trust in me. Let me not be ashamed. Let not my enemies triumph over me.
In the bell tower, a German sniper aims his gauze-muffled rifle at Caparzo's head. Caparzo holds his letter out to Mellish.
Copy it. Copy it and send it for
me. Copy, you're gonna send it yourself. Put it down. Don't blood! Copy, I see it.
The German glances out with both eyes, then squints through his scope again.
It's to my dad. It's got blood on it.
Following Caparzo's line of sight with his crosshairs, the sniper finds the abandoned car. Jackson steadies his rifle barrel against the rubble embankment. The German scans farther along and makes out the shape of Jackson's helmet. Jackson's rifle flashes. The bullet shatters the German's scope and pierces his right eye. The GIs hold steady. Mellish grins.
We got him. Stay down.
Miller's squad rushes the square. Wade rushes to Caparzo with compresses. The French girl runs back to her parents. Squatting in the living room ledge, the French father holds out his hand. The girl scrambles up the mound of rubble and lets him pull her up. Once in his arms, she slaps him in the face. On the ground, Sergeants Hill and Horvath lead the sweep through the square.
Get that 30 up the street!
Hill's men follow. Then Horvath doubles back, his M1 rifle ready across his chest. A small fire burns a few yards away in the battering downpour. Horvath rejoins his squad, standing around Caparzo. As he approaches, Wade unfolds a green wool army blanket. Miller strides up with an angry scowl.
That's why we can't take children.
Stooping, he yanks off one of Caparzo's dog tags and puts it inside his own jacket.
Sergeant Horvath, do an ammo check. Off him. Canteens. Fill him up.
Wade takes Caparzo's crumpled letter from his bloody fist, then reverently covers him with a blanket.
Jackson, sir! Mellon!
Lingering a moment beside the body, Wade's chest heaves. Ryben rests his BAR on his hip and glares at Caparzo's shrouded face.
Fuck on it.
Later, Sergeant Hill stalks into an alleyway and notices a machine gun muzzle poking out through a window. He ducks back.
Thunder!
Quiet! Come on in!
Hill goes to the window, where a figure sits in the shadows.
Hey, guys, we're looking for Captain Hamill.
Somewhere down there,
across the square.
Across the square.
Go easy. Watch your snipers.
Captain Miller crosses to the other side of the alley, then gestures to Horvath to follow. Horvath waves the men into line behind the captain, who leads them into a courtyard between the buildings. They look up cautiously at the high, sheer walls. At the rear, Hill stops one of his radio men.
Jimmy T, go find Captain Hamill. Bring him in here.
What, up there?
How the hell should I know? Would you just go look, please? Thank you, you moron.
As the troops gather, Hill sets his rifle down on a pile of bricks and timber.
You guys just blank out here for a while. I'm gonna get this goddamn hitchhiker out of my boot.
His pack knocks aside a beam, which breaks down a dilapidated wall and exposes a German hideout. Both the Germans and Americans draw weapons and hold each other at gunpoint, 12 feet apart. A lean-faced German bares his teeth. Jackson shouts at the top of his lungs. Upham desperately tries to be heard. Shots riddle the Germans, who instantly fall on the floor. On an upper balcony, two Americans hold smoking Thompson machine guns.
Clear up!
Ryben crawls on his belly toward the dead men. Mellish's face strains anxiously. Sergeant Hill pulls off his helmet and holds up his hand. The GIs charge into the German hideout, where one man slumps forward, half-leaning on a table. Horvath knocks him over, and blood spouts from the dead man's mouth.
Nothing make you old.
Miller hears him.
Let's hope so.
As Wade checks out the fallen Germans, one of the balcony shooters hurries down to the courtyard. He's a paratrooper, with his pockets tied down and his pants tucked in his boots.
Fred Hamill, Pathfinder, 101st.
John Miller, 2nd Rangers. Thank you. We're here looking for a private James Ryan. He's part of your outfit. Any chance at all you policed him up?
After the rainstorm.
The road in.
Scenic. We lost most of our ammo.
Not to mention one of our men.
Lieutenant, redeploy that bazooka to the right side of the road.
Yes, sir.
And get Ryan up here.
Ryan! Ryan! Center.
Down the muddy street, a soldier appears and trots up to Captains Miller and Hamill. He's tall and athletic with a stoic gaze. Mellish squints as Ryan runs by. Ryben mutters to Horvath.
Told you he was an asshole.
Ryan stops in front of Captain Hamill.
Sir, Private Ryan, recording's ordered.
At ease. Captain Miller, Second Rangers, wants a word.
Ryan's eyes dart from one man to the other. Miller takes the soldier aside.
Take a knee.
Ryan takes off his helmet and sits on it, balancing his rifle across his lap. Miller's men stand around by a nearby tree and watch.
Private, I'm afraid I have some bad news for you.
Ryan's breath quickens as he fixes his gaze on Miller. The captain leans back and looks at the sky.
Well, there isn't any real easy way to say this, so I'll just say it. Your brothers are dead. We have orders to come get you. Because you're going home.
Captain Hamill grips Ryan's shoulder as the young man gulps. Miller bites his lip and keeps the private in his steady gaze. Tears fill Ryan's eyes. A sob overtakes him, and Hamill pulls him closer.
Oh, my God, my brothers are dead.
Hamill glares at the gathered Rangers, then at Miller.
I'm supposed to take a picture when we go home.
Upham bows his head, and raindrops fall from his helmet. Mellish's face softens, and he glances away. Wade, holding a lit cigarette, stands motionless. Pulling back from Hamill's chest, Ryan takes a breath.
I can't tell you.
How did they die?
They were killed in action.
Ryan shakes his head.
I can't be. I can't be. My brother's still in grammar school.
You're James Ryan.
Yeah.
James Francis Ryan, from Iowa.
James Frederick Ryan, Minnesota.
The Rangers shift uncomfortably and turn aside. Jackson walks away.
What does that mean? Does that mean my brothers are okay?
Yeah, I'm sure they're fine.
Are you sure that they're okay, though?
We're looking for a different Private Ryan. This is just a big foul-up.
How do you know? How can you be sure? How do you know the foul of vision that his brothers are okay?
Lieutenant, I'm sorry for the trouble.
I just wrote them a letter before I left.
Ryben's stubbled jaw hardens and his gaze turns cold. The sergeants and the captains confer.
So when the hell's our Ryan?
I don't know. Are you in touch with your CO? Figures.
What unit's your Ryan in?
Baker Company, 506.
The guy with the broken foot, he's 506, right?
Yeah, Charlie.
Later, medics wrap a paratrooper's foot.
Ryan? Don't know. Man!
Where was your drop zone?
Just inside of Vierville.
Vierville? How the hell did you end up way up here?
You got me, sir. C-47 took heavy fire. Pilot went crazy trying to get out of there, turning every which way. Took more fire on the drop. Got messy. I ended up here. I haven't seen a single guy from my stick, sir. God knows where they are.
Anybody from Baker Company have, like, a big mouth? Talk about where the drop zone might have been?
No, sir, but I know Baker Company had the same rally point as us.
Show me.
Later.
My men are beat. We're going to hold up here about 3 hours. We'll pull out after dark. Got anything left in this town, like a 3-star hotel? Something with clean sheets and soft pillows and room service?
How about a nice, comfy church?
I'll take that.
What have you heard? How's it all falling together?
Well, we got the beachhead secure. Problem is, Monty's taking his time moving on Khan. We can't pull out till he's ready, so.
That guy's overrated.
No argument here.
You gotta take Khan so you take St. Lo.
You gotta take St. Lo to take Boulogne.
Boulogne, you got Cherbourg.
Cherbourg, you got Paris.
Paris, you got Berlin.
And then that big boat home.
Hamill glances at Miller as they walk.
I'm sure as hell could use you around here, but I understand what you're doing.
You do?
Yeah. I got a couple of brothers myself.
Oh.
Good luck.
Thank you.
I mean it. Find them. Get them home.
Hamill strides ahead. Miller stares after him. Later, in a ruined church, Miller's hand trembles in candlelight.
What's with your hand?
Horvath and Miller watch it.
Strange.
started in Portsmouth when they brought us down for embarkation, and comes and goes.
You may have to get yourself a new line of work. This one doesn't seem to agree with you anymore.
Miller flexes his fingers. Looking at Horvath, he cracks a grin.
What? What? What was the name of that kid that Anzio, the one that was always walking around on his hands, you know, and he was singing that song about the man with the fly trapeze? Vecchio. Vecchio.
He's a goofy kid.
Remember, he used to pee a V on everybody's jacket? For Vecchio.
For victory.
Nearby, Wade looks up at them from a flashlight aimed downward.
It was a midget, wasn't it?
Wade makes a clean copy of Caparzo's bloodied letter.
He got shot in the foot once, didn't he, when he was walking on his hands?
Yeah. He could walk faster on his hands.
Grinning, Horvath rubs his nose.
Becky. Yeah. Caparzo.
In the flickering candlelight, Horvath's smile fades.
You see, when you end up killing one of your men, you see, you tell yourself it happened. So you could save the lives of 2 or 3 or 10 others. Maybe 100 others. Do you know how many men I've lost under my command?
How many?
94. But that means I've saved the lives of 10 times that many, doesn't it? Maybe even 20, right? 20 times as many. And that's how simple it is. That's how you rationalize making the choice between the mission and the men.
Except this time the mission is man.
This Ryan better be worth it. He'd better go home, cure some disease, or invent a longer-lasting light bulb or something. The truth is, I wouldn't trade 10 Ryans for 1 Vecchio or 1 Caparzo.
Amen.
Miller's hand trembles.
There goes again.
Sir, are you all right?
Now look, we're going to move out in 2 hours. Why don't you get some sleep?
Jackson sleeps.
No, he doesn't.
What's that?
Falls asleep like that. I mean, look at him. The guy's lights out, the minute his head hits the back.
Clear conscience.
Yeah, what's it saying? If God's on our side, who the hell could be on theirs?
Up him.
If God be for us, who could be against us?
Yeah, what I say?
Wade.
Well, actually, the trick to falling asleep is trying to stay awake.
How is that, Wade?
Well, when my mother was an intern, she used to work late through the night, sleep through the day. So the only time that we ever got to talk about anything was when she'd get home. So what I used to do, I used to lie in my bed and try to stay awake as long as I could, but it never worked, because the harder I tried, the faster I'd fall asleep.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't have mattered none in my house. My ma, she would have come home, shook me awake, chatted me up till dawn. I swear that woman was never too tired to talk.
That's probably the only time she could get a word in.
Ryben puckers his lips at Mellish, who gives it back. Wade.
Funny thing is, sometimes she'd come home early, and I'd pretend to be asleep.
Who, your mom?
Yeah. She'd stand in the doorway looking at me, and I'd just keep my eyes shut. And I knew she just wanted to find out about my day, that she came home early. Just talk to me. I still wouldn't move. I'd still pretend to just be asleep.
Wade's eyes pool with tears.
I don't know why I did that.
Ryben's lean, sweaty face fixes on Wade, then looks away. His jaw shifts and he bows his head. The captain comes over.
We only got a couple hours. Shut up, go to sleep.
Captain Miller treads past. Upham, seated in a pew, looks up at him.
Cap. Sir?
Corporal?
Miller takes a seat next to him.
How you doing there? You all right?
Yeah, I think this is all good for me, sir.
Really? How is that?
War educates the senses, calls into action the will, perfects the physical constitution, brings men into such swift and close collision in critical moments that man measures man.
Yeah, well, I guess that's Emerson's way of finding the bright side.
You know Emerson, sir?
I know some.
Upham smiles as Miller sips from a tin cup.
So where are you from, Kevin? What did you do before the war?
What's the pool up to?
I think it's around 300 turns.
Well, when it gets up to 500, I'll give you the answers and we'll split the money. How about that?
Well, if that's the way it feels, sir, I feel it's my duty and your command to suggest that we wait until it gets up to 1,000, sir.
I wonder if we don't live that long.
500?
500 would be good, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Get some sleep, Corporal.
Yes, sir.
In the dimly lit sanctuary, Upham watches Captain Miller pace away. Light flashes on the captain's shoulders and the back of his head. Upham scoots to the end of his pew, his boyish gaze fixed on the captain. Miller stops by an archway. Bursts of light overhead flash on his bowed profile. Now, in darkness, blasts of stark white flare up along the horizon. Miller's squad passes in single file, silhouetted by the flickering explosions. Daytime. In a brambly stretch of woods, Miller's squad files along a path. Ahead of them, dirt lies piled against a tree where the nose of a crashed transport glider has gouged into the brush. Past the wreckage, they find a camp of American soldiers, mostly wounded, scattered across a sunny clearing.
Wade!
Yes, sir.
See what you can do.
Yes, sir.
Hold on, fellas. Won't be much longer.
What are we doing here?
Kneeling by a casualty, Wade all gets right. Out some gauze.
Yeah, you're all right. Don't worry about it.
What do you want?
Doc's in town.
Jackson cradles right, a man's right. Head.
Don't worry, fellas. 29th Infantry's breaking through. They'll be here soon.
One soldier sits up.
Captain. Hey, Captain.
Soldier, you want to fill me in?
Yeah, Lieutenant DeWin, sir. 99th 2 Carrier Squadron carrying in 327th Glider Infantry. This one was mine, sir. I was a pilot.
Private.
22 men
Private,
dead.
Private, take care of the storm here.
I ended up over there with that a scratch. Took my co-pilot's head right off.
Well, where's the unit? Who are these people?
Well, the guys we came in with, sir, they headed off first night. Haven't seen them since. Meantime, other guys keep showing up. One, two, half dozen at a time. Then some officer will come along, patch together a mixed unit. It often make trouble, sir.
Canteen over here.
We're looking for a private, James Ryan. He's in Baker, coming in 506 in the 101st.
No, you got me, sir. A lot of guys coming in and out of here.
Upham!
Yes, sir.
Check out that squad. See if Ryan's in it.
Yes, sir.
Upham goes to some passing soldiers.
Ryan?
Smell that leg right there. Find out if it's south of Cheese.
Smoking a cigar, Ryan shoots a disgruntled glance at Wade, then sniffs the wound. He jerks back.
What?
He nods.
Hands over your head.
Now Mellish faces German POWs being marched and holds up his Star of David.
Juden. I'm Juden, you know? Juden.
Yeah, I couldn't pry him out of there hard as I tried.
The pilot.
I need a winch.
In the wreck, Horvath looks at a dead soldier's helmet.
Stars.
Yeah. Brigadier General Amend. Deputy Commander 101st. Some fucking genius had the great idea of welding a couple of steel plates onto our deck to keep the general safe from ground fire. Unfortunately, they forgot to tell me about it until we were just getting airborne. Well, that's like trying to fly a freight train. Okay? Gross overload. Trim characteristics all shot to hell. I nearly broke both my arms trying to keep her level. And when we released, you know, I cut as hard as I could. Tried to gain some altitude and still keep her from stalling. We came down like a fucking meteor. And it's how we ended up. The others, they stopped easy enough, okay, though, you know. We were just too damn heavy, you know. Grass was wet. Downward slope and all. 22 guys dead.
Miller looks down grimly.
All that for a general?
One man.
A lot of that going around.
Fubar.
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 Y'all got that right?
Yeah, look up Fubar in the German dictionary. There's no Fubar in there.
Hop him.
Yes, sir.
There's more paratroops out there. Find out if one of them's Ryan.
Yes, sir.
Oh, you might want to check these out, sir. Dog tag. More than I really want to count, sir.
He tosses Miller a full pouch.
I've got covered a lot of bodies, sir.
Jackson. Start going through those.
Yes, sir.
I'll help.
Ryben strides alongside Jackson.
What do you think, Jackson? Think that little prick's in there?
Well, if he is, I'm gonna find him. Regret that son of a bitch.
Got big money saying this guy's still alive.
$10 says I nail him first.
They sit. Mellish joins them.
Yeah. Looks don't stand a chance. You think this little shit bird's in here or what?
Just keep looking.
All right. Gary Iannico. Vinner Urbino. Mike Cesario. I swear, all the guineas are mine, huh?
Their hands search rapidly through the gleaming dog tags, which lie spread out on an overturned crate. As Captain Miller takes a handful, Jackson continues sifting.
Where's this sumbitch? Don't mix him up, Jackson, all right? Keep him in your own fucking pile. How am I supposed to know who we got?
Why don't you just shut up, Rob? Everybody be friends.
Jackson spits on one and wipes it clean.
I think I got a winner.
What are you talking about?
Ryan.
Take a look at that, Mellish.
Mellish reads the tag.
You know what? You're a genius. You really are. R-I-E-N-N-E. It's Rien, and it's French. All right? You know what that means?
It means nothing.
Ranks of tired young paratroopers walk by. They stare as the three men rifle through the tags.
You need a hand with that?
I get a full house. Full house, he's got.
I got the sweet. I got the straight
plug. See, no, you were looking at my tags. You're cheating.
A young bloody-faced soldier watches uneasily as Ryben finds a tag with a bullet
that?
Hole.
Can you read that shit? Jesus Christ, look at this poor bastard, huh?
I guess they're not bulletproof, huh?
Guess not.
Wade approaches as Miller grins at the bantering men. Wade angrily gathers up the tags.
All right, I got three of the times.
What the hell are you doing?
Oh, goddamn airborne watching.
Dump the liquid chips.
All right.
Put them back in there.
More young soldiers go by, watching Miller and his men. Miller meets their gaze and swallows hard. He rubs his unshaven jaw and lowers his watery eyes to the collection of dog tags in his hand. He turns them over in his hands, then tosses them back onto the pile.
She's not here.
He steps into the slow-moving line of soldiers and French civilians.
Maybe we should bust up into a couple of different groups, huh? Wander the woods like Hansel and Gretel, calling his name. He's bound to hear us sooner or later. Ryan!
That might be a little hard to do, Captain.
Maybe the locals have seen it. Hey, you know, excuse them all. Probably through Ryan, James Ryan, merci beaucoup. Ryan, anybody know Ryan? 101st Airborne, Ryan, you know a guy named Ryan? Private James Ryan from Iowa? Anybody know a Ryan? James Ryan!
Hey, Joe.
Doesn't Mandelson pal around with Orion from C Company?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, bring him up here, would you?
The soldier, Joe, doubles back. Wade, Jackson, and the others watch intently as Joe returns, escorting a soldier with a bloodied ear.
You know Private Ryan?
You're going to have to speak up,
You're going to have to speak up, sir. My hearing is not so good.
German grenade
comes and goes. The German grenade went up right by my head.
Got it. You know Private Ryan?
Who?
Private Ryan? James Ryan?
Jimmy Ryan?
James Francis Ryan.
No. James Francis Ryan.
All right, give me a pencil. Something to write on. Quick. Come on, a pencil.
Upham pulls a pencil from his pocket.
Write this down. James Francis Ryan, Iowa, Do you know him? Does he know him? Read the message, look.
Upham holds up the note.
Yeah, of course I know him, sir.
Does he know where he is?
Upham jots down the question and shows it to Michelson.
Yeah, we missed our drop zone by about 20 miles. Ended up way over by a Bumville or some damn place. Him, me, and a couple other guys were coming here to the rally point. Ran into a colonel who was gathering up men to go to, Rommel.
Rommel.
To babysit a bridge. That's the last I seen of him,
great,
sir.
Great. Thank you. Right, thank you. Read, and thank you.
You're welcome.
Symbol on me.
Miller returns the pouch of dog tags.
Thank you, Lieutenant.
The squad gathers around him.
Rommel.
He unfolds a map.
We're here. There. Rommel is on the Merdaret River right here, just to the southwest of us.
You know anything about this bridge you was talking about, Cap?
Yep.
He takes out a compass.
The target has always been Cherbourg. We can't push on Paris until we take a deep water port, and Rommel knows that. So he's going to try to get his armor across the Merdaret River anywhere he can. That way he can hit our invasion forces at the flank when we make the big right turn to Cherbourg. That makes any village on that river with an intact bridge solid gold real estate.
The men watch their captain's jittery hand. As Wade and Jackson look up at him, Miller reads their sober faces. He glances down at his shaky grasp. His eyes return to his men. Sergeant Horvath gives him a faint smile. Miller closes the compass.
Let's go.
Later, under an ashen gray sky, Miller's squad crosses a grass-tufted field toward a narrow stretch of woods. Reaching a gap in the brambles, they find the bodies of three American soldiers decomposing in the grass. Miller signals. The men hurry behind a low stand of bushes and crouch down with their guns ready. Captain Miller and Sergeant Horvath duck into the dense tree line and move quickly through the shadows. They pause by a log. Across an adjacent clearing, they spot a huge panel of metal beams and crosspieces held upright by four towers. One of the panel's ends has been blown off.
What the hell is that?
The radar side. It's got to be out of action.
Oh, it looks like we got something in that sandbag bunker right under the station. See it?
Yeah, I guess so.
They return to the squad.
What is it? Machine gun. Probably MG-42.
Jesus.
Is that what got those guys?
Maybe one of them's on board.
No, their patches are 82nd, so your luck's not that good.
Yeah, well, I don't know how fast the rest of you Bettys are. But I'm thinking we detour this way, quick and quiet, the crowds will never even know we were here. So, Captain, what I'm trying to say is, why don't we just go around the thing?
I hear what you're saying. We can't go around it.
Jackson.
I'm with Robin on this one, sir. When we left them 88s.
For the Air Force. The Air Forces are going to spin ordnance on one machine gun.
Captain.
Mellish.
We can still skip it and accomplish our mission. I mean, this isn't our mission, right, sir?
Well, that's what you want to do, Mellish? You just want to leave it here so they can ambush the next company that comes along?
No, sir, that's not what I'm saying. I'm simply saying it seems like an unnecessary risk given our objective, sir.
Our objective is to win the war.
Miller glares at Mellish.
Sir, I don't have a good feeling about this one.
Well, when was the last time you felt good about anything?
Miller puts on his helmet, grabs his rifle, and hustles away from them. He jogs, hunched, along a grassy ridge. The radar structure lies 100 yards off on higher ground. Miller races from tree to tree. His men regroup beside him, behind a stand of leafy trees.
All right. Three runners with suppressing fire. Mellish, you hook to the right. I'll go up the middle. Who's going left?
The men look at him blankly. Miller's eyes widen.
Who's going left?
Ryben spits out his gum. Jackson nods.
I'll do it. I'll go left.
All right. Up and switch off with Jackson. And you linger in the rear.
Yes.
We advance and keep pressure on him until he has to change out his barrels. I think we should be able to hit him from grenade range.
Maybe I should go up the middle, sir.
The way you run, I don't think so.
Maybe I should go left, sir.
Maybe you should shut up. Ryben, base of fire.
Ryben hands Jackson a grenade. Mellish and Wade take off their packs.
Mags and clips where you can reach him, and extra grenades for the base runners.
Horvath cocks his rifle. The squad charges. Jackson, Miller, and Mellish split up. As Upham runs past a dead cow, bullets riddle the animal's belly. He takes cover behind another carcass and peeks anxiously from behind it. The Rangers sprint up the sloped field, which is pocked with craters. As the GIs fire at the German machine gun bunker, Upham watches their running forms grow hazy in the gunfire smoke. He takes the scope off Jackson's sniper rifle. Through the crosshairs, he watches Ryben and Miller. Bullets rake the dirt all around them. Miller lobs a grenade at the German bunker. A German catches it and throws it back too far. Upham ducks down. Explosions tear through the bunker. Upham looks through the scope again. Watching a trench rimmed with barbed wire, he sees the Rangers hurl more grenades. The Germans toss more back. As the dust spreads, a distant machine gun sparks. Upham lowers the scope from his eye. His gaping face twitches. Upham grabs two packs and struggles uphill. Hustling through clouds of smoke, he finds the squad kneeling by a fallen soldier. Two hands tear away the wounded man's shirt. It's Wade. His chest is pierced through with bullet holes. He's conscious. His fingers curl and his hands spasm.
Wade, you're fine. You're going on a hospital.
The men apply sulfur powder.
I got him.
Horvath lifts Wade's legs.
I got him. Up, give me your canteen.
Mellish reaches for it.
Come on.
He pours water on the wounds and wipes away blood.
How's it look?
I'm gonna be okay.
Blood flows from the dime-sized holes in Wade's gut. Miller and the others roll Wade onto his side. Blood streams from his wounds. As Mellish tries to wipe them, Miller feels under Wade's body along his back.
It's all right. Wade, you got an exit wound. It's in the small of your back.
How big's the hole in
about the size of an acorn.
As they roll him back, he coughs blood.
Some pressure on it.
Mellish, Jackson, and Miller lay hands on Wade's gut and press. Upham stands motionless, watching.
Is there anything bleeding worse than the other?
Yeah, right here. You know what it is? Right here. I'm gonna put your hand on it.
We got some pressure on
there. Right there. That's good. Okay? That's the one.
Oh my God, my liver! Oh my God,
so
my
come liver. On, Wade. Tell us what to do. Tell us how to fix you.
What do you mean? What can we do, Wade? Tell us what to do.
I could use a little morphine.
Miller looks to Horvath.
Give it to him. Give it to him.
Horvath sticks the capsule into Wade's leg.
There you go, Wade. Here you go. Here it comes.
Please, there you go.
Horvath stabs another amp of morphine into Wade's thigh, folds his hands, and bows his head.
Mama, I wanna go home. I wanna go home. Mama.
Wade's face goes still. His head lies cradled in Jackson's hands, and the other men still press on his chest. Mellish stares, slack-jawed. Leaning over Wade, Miller reaches down with his bloody hand and takes the letter from his pocket. He walks away. The men look up. They see Ryben kick a German survivor in the gut, then ram the man's head with his rifle butt. Jackson races uphill and joins in on the beating. The two GIs lay into the German soldier. As Mellish joins them, they prop the man up against piled sandbags, throw off his helmet, and cock their rifles.
Not yet!
Miller hikes up to them.
First, make a mark and cover Wade's body for grave detail. Same thing for those paratroopers down there. Strip that stuff off and check him for intelligence.
Ask this piece of shit if he's the one who shot Wade. Ask him!
Mellish grabs up
matter.
Him.
It does matter.
Was du am Maschinengewehr?
Nein, ich hab nachgeladen. Ich hab nicht geschossen.
Shut up with that filthy pig lad.
Jackson, you're here.
Jackson fingers a hole in the shoulder of his jacket.
Yes. This is just in the arm, sir.
Get it clean and dressed. You and Sarge watch the perimeter.
Bitte tötet mich nicht, sir. Bitte tötet mich nicht. Ich will mich ergeben.
So he says, please don't shoot. He wants
to care what he says, Alvin.
Miller walks away.
Sir. Sir, you're going to let them kill him? This is not right, sir.
You can help him with the bodies.
Upham gapes.
What is happening?
To Upham's left, two German soldiers lie dead beside a smoking machine gun. Charred, bloody wounds show through their torn uniforms. Later, as the German prisoner digs, Jackson hands a canteen to Upham. The corporal offers it to the prisoner. Jackson grabs it back and glares at Upham. Now by himself, Miller unfolds a map. Troop movement symbols mark the page. Miller sits on a chunk of concrete, staring blankly at the map. He nods faintly. Then his fingers twitch and his face tenses. Blinking quickly, he glances over his shoulder, then lowers himself out of view of his men. His face seizes with grief, and he cries silently, rocking back and forth. Struggling to collect himself, Miller pockets the map. The tears come again. His body shudders with each sob. He composes himself, massaging his trembling right hand. He blinks, and an anguished grimace overtakes his face. Leaning on his knee, Miller presses his face against his fists. He sits up, his eyes ringed with tears. Glancing over his shoulder, he catches his breath. He wipes his nose on his sleeve and stands up. Now Upham hands the German prisoner a cigarette.
American.
I like a Millikan.
They sit with their feet in the shallow grave. The squad approaches them as they light up.
Steamboat Willie. Doot, doot.
Steamboat Willie.
Two rifles stuck in the ground and topped with helmets make grave markers. As Miller unloads the rifles, the prisoner starts digging frantically. They yank him away.
Yeah, that's what you think. Come on.
No! Yeah.
Fine.
He jumps back to his digging. The men cock their rifles.
Please. I like America. Fancy schmancy. What a sense. Go fly a kite. Get back your tongue. Cool beans.
Horvath and Ripon stare coldly.
Betty Boo. What a dish. Betty Grable. Nice gams.
Captain Miller frowns. The prisoner's gaze flits from face to face.
I say, can you see? I say, can you see? I say...
Miller stares grimly down at the prisoner's nervous, blood-stained face.
Fuck Hitler.
Fuck Hitler!
He turns to Upham.
Es tut mir leid, den Mann, den ihr verloren habt. Den Sanitäter, es ist halt krieg.
Miller grabs the prisoner by the collar.
Sir, he says he's sorry about Wade. Captain, this isn't right.
Miller marches the prisoner away.
The prisoner, he surrendered. He surrendered, sir.
Upham follows at his heels. At the hilltop, Miller blindfolds the captured German. Ryben, Jackson, and Mellish ready their guns.
Tell him to march 1,000 paces in that direction. Then he can take off the blindfold, yes, we'll be gone. And he turns himself into the first Allied patrol he comes across.
You gotta be kidding me. We'll let him go?
He's a POW, Ryben. Can't take him with us. Our guys will pick him up sooner or later.
Upham starts the prisoner pacing downhill.
Take me out to the bullet game.
Yeah, only if he doesn't get picked up by his own Wehrmacht first and then thrown back into circulation.
Ryben steps closer.
Cap, you just let the enemy go.
This is such bullshit. You all got that right.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
Right, this is bullshit.
Shooting prisoner, that'd be okay.
Shut your mouth. That's against the goddamn rules.
Yeah, well, the goddamn rules just walked off with your new friend. But I guess that was the decent thing to do, Captain?
They watch the blindfolded prisoner walking off, feeling the air in front of him. Miller glances blankly at Ryben.
Get your gear. Let's go.
Ryben stands in place.
You heard him. Gear up. Captain just gave you an order.
Yeah. Like the one he gave to take this machine gun. That was a real doozy, wasn't it, Sarge?
Soldier, you are way out of line.
Yes, sir. That was one hell of a call coming to take this nest, but... the hell, we only lost one of our guys going for it.
He faces Miller.
I swear, I hope Mama Ryan's real fucking happy knowing that little Jimmy's life is a little bit more important than two of our guys. But then again, we haven't found them yet, have we?
Horvath shoves him down, then tries to help him up.
Get the hell off me.
Ryben, get up. Gear up. Fall in.
Taking his rifle in hand, Ryben holds his face inches from Horvath's.
I'm done with this mission.
Miller gathers his gear as Ryben walks. Horvath goes after him.
Hey! Hey!
Sir.
Don't you walk away from your captain. Ryben, get back in line.
No, sir. I'll spend the rest of my life in the stockade if I have to, but I'm done with this.
I'm not going to ask you again, soldier.
Captain!
Horvath draws his pistol.
Fall in!
You going to shoot me over Ryan?
No, I'm going to shoot you because I don't like you.
Sir, Upham sprints over to Miller.
Go, just let him go.
Are you going to shoot me?
Are you letting this happen? Captain, you see this?
Captain.
Sir.
Sir, Ryan's dead.
Bullshit.
Sir,
we have a situation.
Dad, bullshit.
Get in on.
Captain, I have a sixth sense about these things. I know it in my bones.
If you don't kill that son of a bitch crab, now you're going to shoot me.
Huh? He's better than you.
Then why don't you just do it, Sarge? Do it, man. Put one in my leg and give me that million.
I'm going to shoot you in your big goddamn mouth.
Well, put your money where your mouth is and do it then.
Shut
do
up,
it.
You don't know
pull
how
the trigger
to
already!
Up.
Captain, please!
What's the pool on me up to?
I'll do it, I will do it! Ryben,
You are a coward, son of a bitch!
I'm waiting, son.
Son!
What's
the pool on me up to right now? What's it up to? What is it, $300? Is that it? $300? I'm a school teacher.
The soldiers all look at Miller.
I teach English composition. This little town called Adley, Pennsylvania. In the last 11 years, I've been at Thomas Alva Edison High School.
Horvath lowers his pistol.
I was a coach of the baseball team in the springtime. Back home, and I tell people what I do for a living, and they think, well, now that figures. But over here, it's a big mystery. So I guess I've changed some. Sometimes I wonder if I've changed so much, my wife is even going to recognize me whenever it is I get back to her. And how I'll ever be able to tell her about days like today. Ryan, I don't know anything about Ryan. I don't care. Man means nothing to me. It's just a name. But if, you know, if going to Rommel and finding him so he can go home, if that earns me the right to get back to my wife, well, then that's my mission.
He looks at Ryman.
You want to leave? You want to go off and fight the war? All right. All right, I won't stop you. I'll even put in the paperwork. I just know that every man I kill, the farther away from home I feel.
As Miller turns and walks uphill, Ryben sets off along the road. On the distant ridge, the rifle grave markers stand silhouetted against the dusky sky. Ryben slows, then stops and turns his gaze uphill. Handwritten words on the back of his jacket read, Brooklyn, NY, USA. Up on the ridge, Miller makes his way past coils of barbed wire toward the graves. Set against the wire's tangled silhouettes, Miller's dark form begins dragging a body. Nearby, two more rifle grave markers stand black against the pale horizon. Captain Miller pulls the body toward a large leafy tree behind him. The rest of the squad steps over to help. Ryben watches. Slowly, he sheds his gear and joins them. Silhouetted against the pale sky, the men work side by side. Jackson hands Ryben a pack shovel, then begins digging with his helmet. Miller steps from the burial site. His slow-breathing form looks out beyond the tangled silhouettes of branches and barbed wire. Daytime. Mellish walks through a field dotted with flowers.
Memories of days gone by.
The others listen.
In my solitude, you taught me with memories that never die. I sit in my chair, filled with despair. There's no one could be so sad.
The soldiers walk with their rifles held at their waists, ready to aim. As a breeze rustles the wildflowers and tall grass around them, Miller checks his back and listens.
Half track, cover!
The men duck. A boxy armored vehicle with the treads of a tank drives near. As a German aims from a gun port on its roof, Miller's men keep out of sight. A shell lands near the half-track.
Who's doing a shoot? Who's doing a shoot?
The vehicle smokes. Another shell hits the half-track. With its front on fire, it slows to a stop. As the Germans climb out, Miller's men fire. The Germans collapse.
Get ready to move on the left flank! Take their left flank!
Hold on and make sure they're down.
Miller crouches and hustles toward the disabled half-track. He walks around the front and slows to a creep. Three armed Germans dash from behind the half-track. Amid the gunfire and smoke, all three drop dead. Miller stands ready with his Thompson machine gun.
101st! We're coming out!
In the tall grass, three GIs rise to their feet. One holds a bazooka. Miller signals his men to fall in.
That was a recon element, 2nd SS. We've been expecting a probe. That must have been it.
The trio's leader, a red-bearded man, approaches.
Captain Miller. Charlie Company, 2nd Rangers.
Corporal Henderson, Easy Company, 501st.
Ryan, 1st of 506.
PFC telling me 3rd of 506.
James Francis, Ryan?
Yes, sir. How'd you guess that?
The young soldier with the bazooka flashes a perplexed smile. Miller glances back at his men, who all study Ryan. Later, they walk through a ruined town.
Looks like you guys got hit pretty hard.
Yes, sir. Small unit action. They came in and beat the hell out of us with 88s.
Corporal Henderson leads the men down a rubble-strewn street lined with gutted buildings.
Tell you what, sir, if you're our relief, I'm going to file a complaint.
I wouldn't blame you. Who's your CO?
Would have been Captain Jennings, sir. Afraid the best we can muster up right now is a corporal. So what are you guys all about?
We're here for him. Ryan.
Me, sir?
Ryan stands in a sandbagged gun emplacement with his buddies. He follows Miller to the center of a battered stone bridge.
James Francis Ryan of Iowa?
Yes, sir. Peyton, Iowa. That's correct. What is this about?
Your brothers were killed in combat.
Ryan's brow tightens. He bows his head, then briskly wipes his nose and faces Miller.
Which ones?
All of them.
He breaks his gaze with Miller and stares downward.
I'm a level?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. You might want to take some time with this. There's some place you want to go, and...
Nearby, a paratrooper chewing gum looks on with two others.
What's this all about?
Ryan lost his brothers.
Which one?
All of them.
Ryan faces Miller, choking back tears.
You came all the way out here to tell me that?
You're going home. Our orders are to bring you back.
Bring me back.
Corporal Henderson, don't mean to leave you even more shorthanded, but orders are orders. Any communication about when you're going to be relieved up here?
Sir, there's no way to tell. I mean, we have no idea what's happening south of us.
I have my orders too, sir. They don't include me abandoning my post.
I understand that, but this changes things.
I don't see that it does, sir.
The chief of staff for the United States Army says it does.
Sir, our orders are to hold this bridge at all costs. Now, our planes in the 82nd have taken out every bridge across the Murderette with the exception of two. One at Valone and this one here. We let the Germans take it, we're going to lose our foothold and have to displace.
Private, your outfit wants to stay. That's one thing. Your party's over here.
Sir, I can't leave until at least reinforcements
You got
here.
3 minutes to gather your gear.
Sir, what about them? I mean, there's barely hardly
hey,
enough
asshole.
Of this.
Two of our guys already died trying to find you, all right?
Ryben glares at Ryan. Ryan looks to Miller.
Sir.
That's right.
Ryan steps past Miller and Henderson, slowly approaching Ryben and the rest of the squad.
What were their names?
Arwin Wade and Adrian Caparzo.
Wade and
puzzle.
Ryan takes in the names, then walks along the bridge. He stares blankly at the river.
Doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense, sir. Why? Why do I deserve to go? Why not any of these guys? They all fought just as hard as me.
Ryan's dirty-faced buddies watch and listen intently.
Is that what they're supposed to tell your mother? When they send her another folded American flag?
Ryben and Ryan trade glances.
Tell her that when you found me, I was here, and I was with the only brothers that I have left. And that there's no way I was going to desert them. I think she'll understand that. There's no way I'm leaving this bridge.
Ryan rejoins his buddies in the gun emplacement, hopping over a low rim of sandbags. He sits. His head droops heavily, and a paratrooper crouches down beside him. Miller watches from the center of the bridge. Staring thoughtfully down at the street, he holds his breath and puffs out his lips. He nods to himself a dozen times, then walks off. A paratrooper in Henderson's squad rubs the back of Ryan's head. At the other end of the bridge, Sergeant Horvath jogs to catch up with Captain Miller.
What are your orders?
Sergeant, we have crossed some strange boundary here. The world has taken a turn for the surreal.
Clearly, but the question still stands.
I don't know. What do you think?
You don't want to know what I think.
No, Mike, I do.
Well, part of me thinks the kid's right. What's he done to deserve this? He wants to stay here, fine. Let's leave him and go home.
Yeah.
But another part of me thinks, what if by some miracle we stay and actually make it out of here? Someday we might look back on this and decide that saving Private Ryan was the one decent thing we were able to pull out of this whole god-awful, shitty mess. That's what I was thinking, sir. Like you said, Captain, we do that, we all earn the right to go home.
Now a table lies strewn with guns and ammo.
This is everything. Got the two 30 caliber machine guns, 17 grenades, 11 Hawkins mines. Got the two bazookas, but only got 8 rounds left. Assorted small arms. We had a 60 mortar, but Artie round took it out.
Might as well be spitwads if they're rolling us with tanks.
Which they're sure to do.
What you thinking, sir?
Well, I'm thinking they're going to try to whip around the flanks.
Miller and the soldiers step out into the town's main road.
Unless we can draw them up this main road here in between these buildings where all the rubble makes a bit of a bottleneck.
Disable him?
If we can, make that tank a 60-ton roadblock. We do that. We got a fighting chance at the flanks.
Yes, sir. That's good. Split them up. Don't let them mass in there.
Hit them hard as we can, one-on-one, and fall back to the bridge.
Machine gun to move down here, number two up high somewhere, put a little bad news down on their heads.
That would be the idea. Jackson, if we can, I'd like to get you up in that bell tower.
Yes, sir.
Give you a little company if you need it.
Yes, sir. Some company couldn't hurt. I'd say, a 30 with about 1,000 rounds would be okay.
Parker, job opportunity.
Yeah, well, it's not the worst idea ever, Captain. It's just that everything depends on getting a tank down this main road for us to knock out, right? So how the hell do you plan on doing that?
Robin's right. As our esteemed colleague from the airborne pointed out, what we got here are a bunch of spitwads. So how do we stop the tank if we get it to commit?
Give it a rabbit to chase. We could hit the tank in the tracks.
Yeah, but with what?
We could try a sticky bomb.
Sticky bomb, sir?
Sir, are you making that up?
No, it's in the field manual. You can check it out if you want to.
But we seem to be out of field manuals, sir. Perhaps you could enlighten us.
All right, you have some demolition, don't you? Some TMT or some Composition B?
Yeah, that serves the one thing we got plenty of. I got that bridge wire with enough Composition B to blow it twice.
All right, you can spare some then. You take a standard issue GI sock, cram it with as much Comp B as it can hold, rig up a simple fuse, and you coat the whole thing with axle grease. That way, when you throw it, it should stick. It's a bomb that sticks. It's a sticky bomb. Come up with a better way to knock the tracks off a tank. I'm all ears.
This is good. Now we gotta surrender our socks.
Ryben walks off. Behind him, Upham looks around and casts a worried gaze down the main street. Now the munitions expert, Toynbee, stands in a rowboat at the side of the bridge and loads explosives into a sack.
All the way.
A soldier on the bridge hoists the sack up on a rope. Sergeant Horvath stuffs two of the boxy charges into a sock. Now Mellish and Corporal Henderson position one of the 30-caliber machine guns behind a broken window.
All right, select the field of fire. Crossfire with one in the bell tower.
All right, cover 12 to 9 from here.
At the church tower, the other machine gun is pulled up on a rope. Jackson leans out the belfry window, hoisting the weapon up along the wall. With a cigarette pinched in his lips, he brings in the heavy gun. Now Horvath tosses a sock packed with charges to Ryben. As Ryben smears it with black grease, another soldier passes one already greased to Toynbee, who feeds a fuse into the top. Behind the group, another GI pulls on his boot over his bare foot. Now a paratrooper hands metal canisters to two men by a debris pile.
Here are the mines.
They place them in the rubble as Toynbee spools out detonation wire. Later, Miller leads Ryan and Toynbee across the bridge along old trolley tracks.
We're being the best we can do. Forward machine gun's not in a terrible firing position.
Ryan glances back toward the church.
This position right here?
A bombed house on the far bank.
This is the Alamo. They push us back this far, last man alive blows the bridge.
Now, we only got a 30-second delay on that fuse, so let everyone know that if you are that last man, you better hurry your ass off or you're not going to be alive long.
Ryan faces Miller.
Captain, where am I during all this?
Never more than 2 feet away from me. That's not negotiable.
Now with Mellish.
Get some ammo. Come on.
He and Upham step from a decimated house.
Hey, Upham.
Yes.
Listen to me, all right?
Yeah.
You listening?
Yes.
All right. We're going to be displacing and falling back like crazy sons of bitches.
Right up there.
So you got to be Johnny on the spot with the ammo. Or we're dead.
Right.
You understand that?
Johnny on the spot.
Yeah? You all right?
Yeah. Yes. You know, when we were shipping out of England, the supply started just handing out cartons of cigarettes. I said, no, thank you. I don't smoke.
He takes a drag on a cigarette, and Mellish picks up some ammunition belts.
Quite a situation, huh?
Mellish drapes them around Upham's neck.
Yeah. Fucked up. Beyond all recognition. Right?
Got that right.
Upham nods, then smiles.
Fubar.
Mellish gives him a playful slap.
Ouch.
Yeah, well, Fubar. It's gonna be a real show, huh? Yeah, okay.
Mellish leaves. Lost in thought, Upham snaps to, then scurries after him, dropping a grenade.
Take it easy.
Upham picks it up and follows. Now a hand turns the valve of an espresso machine with two shiny metal urns. It's Miller, behind the counter of an abandoned open-air cafe. He holds a creamer under the coffee maker's spout, turns another valve, then peeks inside one urn. He tilts the machine and gives it a shake. Peering in the other urn, Miller lets the lid drop shut. He heads toward a door. On his way out, he gives the machine one last long stare.
Who's that singing, sir?
Ryan.
Edith Piaf.
What's she so upset about?
Her lover left her, but she still sees his face everywhere she goes.
I'd do it.
Up in the church tower, with Parker seated beside him, Jackson looks through binoculars. The spire roof is stripped of its shingles and blown away at the tip. On the street below, debris burns around the corner from a building's front stoop, where Horvath, Ryben, and Mellish sit. Near them, Upham stands beside a salvaged phonograph.
Even life itself only represents you. Sometimes I dream that I'm in your arms.
What was that part? She sang that before.
Of course.
Of course.
And you speak softly in my ear. And you say things that make my eyes close. And I find that marvelous.
Again, Obama, yes. To be honest with you, I find myself curiously aroused by you and...
Marvelous. Oh, it's a really melancholy song. At the beginning of the song, she says, and then one day you left me, and I've been desperate ever since. I see you all over the sky, I see you all over the earth.
Jesus, but many more songs like this, the crowds aren't going to have to shoot me. I'm just going to slip my own wrist.
You're a strange bird, Upham.
You
know what that song reminds me of? Reminds me of Mrs. Rachel Trublitz, what she said to me the day I left for basic.
What, don't touch me?
No, Mrs. Rachel Trublitz is a super's wife. She comes into my mom's shop to try on a few things, right? And she's easily like a 44 double E.
Double E?
These things are massive, right?
Those are big.
Yeah,
I've got her convinced that she's like a 42 D. All right, so we're in the dressing room. She's trying to squeeze into this side-cut silk ribbon triple panel girdle with the shelf lift brassiere. And it's beautiful because she's just pouring out of this thing, you know?
Is it really tight?
No, it's beautiful. And she sees me, and she can tell I got a heart on the size of the Statue of Liberty, right? So she says to me, Richard, calm down. And she says, now when you're over there, if you see anything that upsets you, or if you're ever scared, I want you to close your eyes and think of these. You understand?
So I said, yes, ma'am.
Now Miller massages his trembling hand. Ryan sits nearby under one of the cafe's wide street-side archways.
Are you all right, sir?
Yeah, I'm just keeping the rhythm.
Is it true you were a teacher back home?
Yes.
See, that's something I could never do. Now, not after the way me and my brothers treated our teachers.
No, sir. We had 1,000 kids like you.
In the rubble-strewn street, Miller sits on a cafe chair and puts his feet up.
I can't see my brothers' faces. And I've been trying, and I can't see their faces at all. Has that ever happened to
you? You got to think of a context.
What does that mean?
Well, you don't just think about their faces. You think about something specific. Something you've done together. Now, when I think of home, I think of something specific. I think of my hammock in the backyard. My wife pruning the rose bushes and a pair of my old work gloves.
One night, two of my brothers came and woke me up in the middle of the night. They said they had a surprise for me. So they took me to the barn, up into the loft, and there was my oldest brother, Dan, with Alice Jardine. Picture a girl who just took a nosedive from the ugly tree and hit every branch coming down. And Dan's got her shirt up. He's working on this bra and he's trying to get it off, and all of a sudden John just screams out, Danny, you're a young man. Don't do it. And so Alice Jardine hears this, and she screams, and she jumps up, and she tries to get running out of the barn, but she's still got this shirt over her head. She goes running right into the wall and knocks herself out.
So now Dan is just so mad at us. He starts coming after us. But at the same time, Alice is over there unconscious. He's got to wake her up. So he grabs her by a leg, and he's dragging her. At the same time, he picks up a shovel, and he's going after Sean. And Sean's saying, "What are you trying to hit me for? I just did you a favor." And so this makes Dan more angry. He tries to swing this thing. He loses the shovel, goes out of his grasp, it hits a kerosene lantern. The thing explodes. The whole barn almost goes up because of this thing.
Ryan holds his head for a moment, then lets his hand drop. He stares downward with a distant gaze.
That was it. That was the last... That was... Dan went off to basic the next day. That was the last night the four of us were together. That was 2 years ago.
Tell me about your wife and those rose bushes.
No. No, that one I saved just for me.
Back by the phonograph, Horvath gently waves his pistol to the music. Ryben smokes a cigar as Mellish fits extra ammo clips onto his rifle strap. Slouching beside them, Upham stares in a daze at the sky and takes a deep breath. In his cafe chair, Miller puzzles at his now steady hand, then looks alertly up the street. Horvath and the others cock their heads and listen. The men get up on their feet, taking their rifles in hand. Captain Miller stands. Corporal Henderson and Mellish run across the street to a bombed-out row house. Two paratroopers hustle from an adjacent building carrying sticky bombs, and Miller gazes up the main street. He peers up at the church tower, where Jackson waves signals with his hands and rifle.
From the east. He seized Tiger tanks, two of them, Panzer tanks, two of them, infantry, 50 plus change.
Miller looks down grimly and paces around. Privates Ryben and Ryan glance at each other, then watch Miller.
Disperse, you know what to do. Ryben, get on the rabbit.
Yes, sir.
As the men hurry to their positions, Ryben hops on the back of the two-man half-track.
Everybody, check your ammo!
Look, Rabbit! I don't need any luck, Sarge! I was born lucky!
The Rabbit has a motorcycle's front end and tank treads in the back. Ryben sits with his back to the driver as they pull away. Now Mellish and Henderson load their machine gun.
105 tracer.
Yeah, tracers point both ways.
Yeah, check the headspace, and she should run.
Now, behind a broken window, a soldier loads bullets into his M1 rifle. From his post, he sees Upham running across the bridge.
Upham! Hustle up!
Beneath the heavy sky, Upham scurries between X-shaped obstacles at the foot of the bridge. Loaded down with ammo cases, he throws himself behind a rubble pile. Fumbling with the cases, he throws aside his rifle, spits out his cigarette, and pulls out a long belt of bullets. Near the town's entrance, Toynbee pours dirt over a detonation wire laid across the main road. He kicks rubble over some exposed wire, then steps to the doorway. Leaning an armchair to hide the wire, he backs into the building, unspooling wire through the first floor. He sits beneath a window. Outside, Miller and Ryan run into a blast ditch 50 yards from the town entrance. As Miller loads a clip onto his automatic, Upham flings himself into the ditch.
Corporal Upham?
Yes, sir.
We don't have a 30 caliber machine gun in this position. Either Mr. Mellish or Mr. Jackson in the bell tower needs that.
Horvath crouches nearby.
Up! Jackson's fine. Turn around to Mellish.
As Upham runs back, Miller tenses and looks down the road. The Rabbit appears in the distance. In a balcony, two soldiers prepare Molotov cocktails, corking the bottles with kerosene-soaked rags as the Rabbit passes below. Ryben springs from the Rabbit and hurls himself into Miller's ditch.
It's a ton of infantry, Captain. I don't know if they took the bait, though.
Miller, Ryan, and Ryben turn to face the road, their rifles aimed. forward position, Horvath clears a chunk of debris from his line of sight. Across the street, Mellish vigorously chews gum.
You got any more of that?
Mellish pulls off a piece. Corporal Henderson pops the gum in his mouth and aims the .30 caliber machine gun. In the ditch, Ryben's expectant eyes measure Ryan's boyish profile. Ryan turns, his open gaze connecting with the rifleman's. Ryben glances down, then nods soberly. The men wait, leaning into the mound of rubble, their rifles aimed down the road. A large shadow rolls across the buildings on their left. At the town entrance, five German soldiers run across the street, heading down a side road. A small, open-turreted tank follows close behind. Miller pulls back.
Panzers didn't take the bait.
He twists to look up at Jackson in the church tower.
Infantry's moving to the left.
Half-Jack just went by with about 20 troops.
Miller sinks back down and aims his rifle at the road. A larger Tiger tank crawls across the intersection, then brakes. Miller and his men watch as a German soldier stands in the tank's turret. The Tiger lurches and turns toward the ditch. Its long-barreled gun cuts through the smoky air as it advances down the main road. Inside the building up the road, Toynbee presses himself under the window as German troops walk right past outside. A German passes close, looking in, his face obscured by the streaked glass. Toynbee waits, then connects the wire to a handheld detonator. Amid the debris, Henderson's .30 caliber is aimed at the road as the massive tank surges into view. Plaster trickles down on the barrel as Henderson pulls back the bolt. Next to him, Mellish chews gum. German troops fan out behind the tank. In the ditch, Miller and Ryan steady their guns as the rubble trembles and slides beneath their weapons. Ryben blinks rapidly, wets his lips, and stares down his sight. The detonator rests in Toynbee's lap. He tightens a wire, sweat glistening on his face. Behind the tank, German troops hustle along the bottleneck of piled rubble. Toynbee twists the detonator. A dozen Germans are engulfed. Others run for cover, dropping beneath the onslaught of gunfire. The tank pauses, 20 yards from Ryan and Miller. Miller looks across the street.
Henderson, displace!
Elsewhere, a GI's smudged hand lights the fuse of a sticky bomb. He holds the greasy black sock, glancing furtively between it and the street. As the tank rolls into view, he runs alongside, the bomb dangling from his tight grip. A blast tears him to shreds. Miller ducks.
You'll do it now! Light it up! You! Light it!
Two paratroopers light their bombs. In the church tower, Parker feeds an ammo belt as he fires. Jackson signals to Miller, who yells across the street.
I'm on fire! 30 infantry on the right flank! Get out of there, find a hole!
As the Tiger's heavy gun swivels toward them, Mellish and Henderson scramble. The shot blasts the wall at their backs as they cut out across the street. Nearby, a gritty cloud showers up him. He rushes clumsily after the gunners into the cafe and up a tight staircase. Catching his breath, he hurls himself into the room where the others yell out a window. Henderson crouches by a blasted hole in the wall.
Right wing!
He fires down on German infantry as they step into a gutted building next door, a few feet away. Upham tosses down the ammo belts, then staggers across the room and looks out. On the street below, German troops spread out from the advancing tank. In a ditch, 10 feet away, Horvath shoots and ducks. The paratroopers with smoking sticky bombs scramble to a deep ditch alongside the Tiger's path. Inches away, the tank's wheels grind past. The GIs slap on their bombs, then bolt. Miller shoves Ryan down.
Get down!
tank treads full to the ground. In the cafe.
Uncle, Bernie Crown! Hurry! Find the captain! This plane's gonna fall!
A bullet rips into the wall at Upham's right. He rushes downstairs. Mellish feeds Henderson a fresh round. Outside, the tank's wheels stop beneath the buckled tracks. Upham ducks headlong into the street in front of the tank. It fires and he whirls back. Crouching, he sprints across the open street. Bullets pelt the dust at his heels as he slides behind a wall. In a balcony, the GIs light their Molotov cocktails as a second open turreted tank rolls by. The flaming men leap and tumble out. In the church tower, Jackson's rifle downs the scattering Germans. The flaming tank rolls to a stop behind the first. Miller and his men watch through the smoke.
Pershing! He's still in this fight!
Miller jumps up.
No, no, Ryan, get down, get down!
Miller shoves Ryan back as the others run to the tank. A burning German writhes. A passing GI takes him out. The Tiger tank jolts and turns its gun turret. Ryben takes in the long gun's trajectory.
Ryan
sits in the ditch unaware. Ryben yanks him away. Nearby, Upham hits the ground as a churning cloud of dust rolls over him. Miller fires into the tank's window slot.
Ryan!
He finds Ryben sitting on Ryan.
Ryan!
Get off of me!
Are you all right?
Get off of me!
Yeah, I'm fine too, Captain.
On the tank, a bleeding German rises from the hatch. Three paratroopers surround him. Blood and brain spatter their faces. They thrust grenades down the hatch. Toynbee looks up.
20 mil! 20 mil!
A mounted machine gun.
Black gun, 20 millimeter. Take it out!
The Germans open fire on the tank, hacking through the paratroopers on top. The Americans crumble in a chaos of smoke and torn limbs. A paratrooper's head rips off. In the church tower.
Heavy weapon or double A below. I ain't got a shot.
Jackson ducks a shell, then runs to the other side. A troop half-track creeps down the back road.
Pincer move, Parker! Targets, 8 o'clock low!
Shit!
God, grab me straight!
He fires on foot soldiers below. In the town center, Ryben, Miller, and Ryan fire on the 20 mil. The German soldiers train the wheeled gun on their attackers. Miller grabs Ryan.
This place! Come on!
The rubble erupts behind them. Two bloody paratroopers crawl across the street. German soldiers trample over them. Upham dashes across the street into Miller. Behind them, more Germans take the street and blow away the wounded paratroopers. Two Germans aim a bazooka. Miller and his men dive. Church tower, Parker fires into the clearing. German soldiers fold to the ground.
I'm out of 30 caliber!
Below, a tank slowly pivots. Jackson.
Blessed be the Lord, my strength, which teaches my hands to war. Am I finished to fight?
He knocks out a gunner, then cocks his rifle. A soldier in his crosshairs crumples.
My goodness, my fortress, my high tower, and my deliverer.
Another soldier collapses.
My shield, and he in whom I trust.
Jackson squints. He misses. His green eyes refocus. Blood spurts from the soldier's neck. Jackson tracks another man. A miss. His nostrils flare above his tight lips. With each shot, his face jerks. Below, the tank's long gun swivels upward. Jackson's eyes widen.
Parker, get it out!
Flames swallow them. In the ditch below, Upham and Miller stare at the smoking tower. Miller gapes, then raises his rifle. The Germans reposition the 20 mil and return fire. Ryan keeps firing as Miller and Ryben reload.
20 millimeters killing us.
We gotta try to flank it somehow.
Let me get over the top shot.
Ryben crawls around the captain, then pauses, gazing over the ditch edge. Putting on his helmet, he charges into the open, firing as he runs. He crosses the main street, mounts a debris pile, then freezes. A long tank gun rises slowly over the mound. Ryben retreats. Now above the cafe, Mellish and Henderson reload their rifles. A German grenade lands at their feet. Mellish tosses it back out. Outside, Upham cowers behind a wall, clutching his rifle to his body, his face squeezed with fear. Above the cafe, another grenade rolls off Henderson's chest. As he tosses it back, Mellish huddles beside the hole. Outside, Upham catches his breath, steeling himself. He launches himself out into the street. He flattens himself against the front of the cafe, checking the path to the stairs. Upham peers around a corner, then jerks back as German troops approach the other side. He eyes the staircase as the Germans slip into the cafe. Upham winces and clutches his rifle close. Upstairs, Mellish shakes his rifle.
Jim! Jim! You got any 30 cal?
I'm out!
The two men freeze, staring at the empty doorway at the top of the stairs. Henderson crouches and raises his automatic.
Upham?
Upham!
Henderson rakes the wall with bullets. A crimson pool of blood quickly spreads across the threshold. Mellish squats, frozen in the center of the room, his eyes darting. Beside him, Henderson crouches. Bullets rip into Henderson. He falls back, clutching his neck. A soldier reaches an automatic around the doorway. Mellish shoots him, then lunges at a third, an SS trooper. He pins him against the wall. On the floor, Henderson writhes. Locked together, the other two men tumble to the ground, rolling over him. Mellish tries to shove the SS trooper off. They twist back over Henderson, their hands crammed in each other's faces. Outside, four German soldiers wheel the 20 mil past a fountain. Suddenly, they all drop. Ryben shoots from a high window. He pulls away and loads a fresh clip. Back in the ditch, Miller and Ryan fend off a handful of Germans. Ryan's empty clip pops out.
I'm out! I need another bandolier! Anybody got a bandolier?
As a tank rolls in from a side street, Sergeant Horvath peers around a wall, a bazooka over his shoulder. He runs out, kneels, and aims. The tank bursts into flames. Upham staggers back into the cafe. He starts up the stairs, his thin throat choking back silent sobs. The German bites down on Mellish's fingers. Mellish wrestles on top, pounds his skull. Mellish sinks his teeth into the German's knuckle. Blood spills to his wrist. On the stairs, Upham edges along the wall. Upstairs, Henderson's body lies motionless in a pool of blood. Mellish draws his bayonet. The SS trooper grabs his wrist and pitches him off, rolling himself on top. Upham's trembling boot lifts to another stair. Still wearing heavy belts of ammo, he glances at the rifle in his hands. Lying on his back, Mellish watches the knife inch toward his own chest. His hand struggles to push the blade back. The SS trooper's face presses closer.
Das kann ich aus. Lass es uns beenden. Let's stop. Listen to me! Stop! No.
As the blade slides into Mellish's chest, the trooper looks into his face.
Es ist einfacher für dich. Viel einfacher. Du wirst sehen, es ist gleich vorbei.
Mellish convulses. The trooper leans closer. sweat drips off his chin onto Mellish's uniform. Holding Mellish's open-eyed gaze, the trooper sinks the knife in, up to the hilt. Mellish's head trembles, then drops back. Outside, Horvath and a German face off. The German pelts him with his helmet. Horvath throws his. They both draw pistols. As the German falls, Horvath staggers back and twists, gripping his left ribs. He hurls his gun and stumbles for cover. Upham sits on the dark stairs, sobbing, his legs folded under him. He looks up as a figure appears on the landing. Upham lifts a trembling hand off his trigger, his shoulders shaking. The SS trooper stands looking down, then starts to descend. Upham shrinks back against the wall, pushing himself up. The trooper watches his face, then brushes past. Upham shuts his eyes. At the door, the trooper alertly scans the street. He glances back, then heads out. Behind him, Upham half stands, plastered against the wall. He squeezes his eyes shut, then sinks slowly to the stair. The long ammo belts drape from his slumped shoulders as he curls up and weeps. Outside, bodies burn around the two bottlenecked tanks. Corpses and torn limbs litter the ground. Down the road, a Tiger tank advances, then breaks. On board, an officer gestures to a soldier. The soldier jumps off and leads troops down another street. The black-uniformed officer shouts from the turret as the tank reverses. With Miller.
Mount!
Those 60 rounds!
Ryan grabs a bazooka round.
We can use them without the tube!
How?
Use Irving wire!
Miller hurls the shell. Ryan arms another rocket-shaped round. Miller lobs it at the advancing Germans. They fall. To the side, a German aims a bazooka at them. Spotting it, Ryan bangs another shell.
Panzer Schreck!
He hurls it, and the German explodes. In the ditch, Ryan bangs and Miller hurls. Suddenly, a tank rises behind them, blocking the sky. The men scramble as the massive tank slams through the ditch. In the tank's wake, through a fog of smoke and dust, German soldiers swarm the ditch. Horvath heaves himself limping through the cafe. He yanks Upham down the stairs. One hand clutching his hip, Horvath drags Upham down the street. Elsewhere, Miller and Ryan and others sprint through a rain of bullets. Ryben joins Horvath.
Alamo! Alamo!
His BAR covers their retreat as he runs. The tank and half-track roll slowly closer. As the Americans race past the bridge obstacles, the Germans fire on their backs. One of the paratroopers crumples. Behind sandbags, Miller grabs a bazooka and kneels. Horvath squats beside him.
We'll take it! You fall back!
You'll be right behind us!
This is worth business!
Horvath's shot glances off a tank. He falls back, shouldering the bazooka.
This place! Ryben
follows him.
Reload!
Meanwhile, Upham slithers up a crater.
German
soldiers pass alongside, firing. Upham hides, pressing close to the ground. Now two GIs sprint away from the ruined smoking town, heads down. It's Miller and Ryan. They cross the cobblestone bridge and take cover as bullets hit the sandbag barrier on the far side. Directly across the water, Germans fire on them from the bank. A half-track rolls toward the bridge. Miller stretches over the barrier and grabs the detonator wire. As he pulls back, bullets whip into the sandbags by his shoulder. He looks at his bloody hand. He winces as he attaches the detonator. Ryben and Horvath fire on the tank.
All right, go!
No good.
We're blowing the bridge! Get off! Please, clear the bridge!
As they run, a bullet hits Horvath's back.
Oh.
One leg folds under. As he picks himself up, a bullet rips into his shoulder. He pitches forward, and Ryben catches him. German soldiers charge toward the bridge, the tank close behind. On the far side, Ryben props Horvath behind the sandbags. Horvath keels over, then sits up.
Sarge! Mike, are you all right?
I just got the wind knocked out of me.
Get out of here! Take cover! We're gonna blow this bridge!
Ryan helps Horvath up.
Ow! Come on!
The tank crawls closer. As Miller trails the wire, Ryben steps out in front, firing.
Tiger Company! Coming across the bridge!
As Miller crosses the road, the German officer points. The tank fires, and the bridge house blows. Miller is thrown forward in the shower of debris. His helmet tumbles off his head. Miller pushes himself to his knees. Frowning, he blinks. Blood speckles his cheek. In front of him, Ryben, firing his rifle. Miller's body sways. Ryben looks over, shouting urgently. Miller takes it in, looks across the bridge. A GI fights off German soldiers as they leap a sandbag wall. A German clubs him, then beats with his rifle butt over and over. Miller glances. Private Ryan, hugging his knees, bawling. Miller shifts forward, stunned. His mouth forms a name. Mike. Sergeant Horvath on a sandbag, his eyes open and glassy.
Mike!
Ryben appears. He yanks Miller up by his collar and dumps him against the sandbags. Miller blinks. He looks over at Mike, lying beside him. Then to the side. 20 feet away, the detonator lies on the open road amid the rubble. More German troops storm the tank obstacles on the town side and take cover behind sandbags. As Upham watches unseen from the freighter, he spots the released German prisoner from the radar tower. Upham stares, a few feet away. Intent on the battle, the prisoner takes firing position with the other troops. Upham drops down. Now Miller sits up. He crawls toward the detonator.
Where the hell are you going? Captain, get back here!
The released prisoner peers down his gun barrel. He nails a GI on the bridge. As Captain Miller staggers into the open, the prisoner shoots him in the right side. Miller drops to his knees, then falls forward. The prisoner recocks the bolt on his rifle, his jaw set. Upham gapes. The Tiger tank's mud-choked treads crush rubble as it surges past the sandbags, onto the bridge. Dazed, Miller pulls himself up. His head wobbles as he props his back against an abandoned motorcycle and draws his pistol. Bullets spit at his spread legs. Through a mist of smoke and gunfire, the armored tank lurches toward him. Miller weakly raises his pistol. Slumped against the bike fender, he fires. Miller blinks in the back blast, his gun weaving in the air. He steadies his arm, then fires again. The tank rolls toward him, 30 feet away. Miller keeps his eyes on it and continues firing. Suddenly, the tank explodes. Miller stares, then looks skyward. A fighter plane swoops low over the flames, then rolls into the sky. Two more fighters sweep over the decimated town. Ryben hurries to Miller. The captain sits gazing at the sky as Ryben plunges his hand into Miller's jacket under the chest pocket. Blood covers the rifleman's hand. Back at the crater, Upham charges out, jabbing his rifle at the retreating Germans. As the Germans drop their guns, the prisoner interrupts Upham. Upham glares at the prisoner, who smiles shakily.
Upham!
Upham aims, tight-lipped, then fires. His rifle traces a slow descent to the ground. He looks solemnly at the other soldiers.
Hold up.
The Germans back away, their arms held up in surrender.
Let's spin it!
The soldiers break into a run. As the town burns beneath the gray sky, Upham stares grimly at the prisoner's body. On the bridge, Ryben applies a cloth to Miller's wound. The captain winces faintly.
Hang in there, Captain.
At the far end of the bridge, Private Ryan squats facing the smoking tank. Wearily, he removes his helmet and pushes himself to his feet. He turns slowly to see relief troops run in. A jeep, a tank, arrive from the rear, and GIs jump down and move out across the bridge. Ryan pauses, staring as troops hurry past him. At the motorcycle, Ryben frantically applies fresh cloths to Miller's wound. The captain sits limply, gazing far away at the sky. Beneath his relaxed features, his bloodied throat convulses. As Ryan crouches beside them, Ryben stands and looks around desperately.
Medic!
He grabs his rifle and sprints toward the rear.
Medic! We got a medic!
Overhead, two fighter planes with black and white striped wings cut through the air. Ryan and Miller gaze after them.
They're tank busters, sir. P-51s.
Angels on our shoulders.
He half smiles. With labored breaths, he turns to Ryan and his lips move.
What, sir?
Miller's muddy hand reaches out, trembling. He pulls Ryan closer.
James.
He smiles.
Earn this.
He rests back.
Earn it.
He inhales sharply, blinks, and then his face goes slack. His gaze grows cold. Ryan rises slowly and stands over him. Ryben returns and sets down his rifle, wincing with grief. As he kneels down, his searching gaze drops to the captain's lap, where Miller's once trembling hand rests in stillness. Ryben removes the letter from Miller's pocket, then steps away.
My dear Mrs. Ryan, it's with the most profound sense of joy that I write to inform you your son, Private James Ryan, is well and at this very moment on his way home from European battlefields. Reports from the front indicate James did his duty in combat with great courage and steadfast dedication, even after he was informed of the tragic loss your family has suffered in this great campaign to rid the world of tyranny and oppression.
Upham joins Ryben and Ryan at Miller's body.
Secretary of War, the men and women of the United States Army, and the citizens of a grateful nation, in wishing you good health and many years of happiness with James at your side. Nothing, not even the safe return of a beloved son, can compensate you or the thousands of other American families who have suffered great loss in this tragic war. But I might share with you some words which have sustained me through long dark nights of peril, loss, and heartache. And I quote, I pray that our Heavenly Father may assuage the anguish of your bereavement and leave you only the cherished memory of the loved and lost and the solemn pride that must be yours to have laid so costly a sacrifice upon the altar of freedom. Abraham Lincoln. Yours very sincerely and respectfully, George C. Marshall, General, Chief of Staff.
As Private Ryan's eyes shine with tears, his face ages into the veterans at the cemetery in Normandy. A pale sky frames his solemn features. Around him, the white crosses and stars of David stand row upon row on the cropped green grass, stretching into the distance. Hands at his side, the older Ryan faces a single cross. His family waits, watching from a distance. He glances at them, then steps closer to the cross and crouches down.
My family is with me today. They wanted to come with me. To be honest with you, I wasn't sure how I'd feel coming back here. Every day, I think about what you said to me that day on the bridge. I've tried to live my life the best I could. I hope that was enough. I hope that at least in your eyes, I've earned what all of you have done for me.
His chin trembles. He swallows hard, Then he stands stiffly. His wife approaches and reads the cross's inscription.
James. Captain John H. Miller.
Her gaze searches her husband's profile. He swallows again, then turns to her. His eyes glisten.
Tell me I have led a good life.
What?
Tell me I'm a good man.
Her brow pinched in bewilderment, she looks back at the cross. She reaches a hand to her husband's face.
You are.
As his gaze returns to the cross, she pats his shoulder and walks back toward their family. Pausing, she turns and looks back. James Ryan swallows hard and lifts his chin. His eyes still on the cross, he steps directly in front of it, then raises his right hand and holds a clean salute. Trembling slightly, he lets it drop. Soft light traces the cross's smooth marble outline. On its face, its engraved words rest in shadow. John H. Miller, Captain, 2nd Ranger BN, Pennsylvania, June 13, 1944. Now an American flag, translucent against the brilliant sunlight, ripples across our view, shrouding the cross. As the cross fades, the flag remains. Its opaque stars and pale stripes undulate gently in the breeze. The flag passes into shadow and gently sinks, fade to black. Credits appear. Directed by Steven Spielberg. Written by Robert Rodat. Produced by Steven Spielberg and Ian Bryce, Mark Gordon and Gary Levinson. Director of Photography, Janusz Kaminski, ASC. Production Designer, Tom Sanders. Film Editor, Michael Kahn, ACE. Music by John Williams. Costume Designer, Joanna Johnston. Co-producers, Bonnie Curtis and Allison Lyon-Segan. Casting by Denise Chamian, CSA. Starring Tom Hanks, Edward Burns, Tom Sizemore, Jeremy Davies, Vin Diesel, Adam Goldberg, Barry Pepper, Giovanni Ribisi, Matt Damon, Dennis Farina, Ted Danson, Harve Presnell, Brian Cranston, Nathan Fillion, David Wohl, Paul Giamatti, Ryan Hurst, Maximilian Martini, and Leland Orser. This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston, described by Robin Sitton, Matthew Lane, and Kate Roosevelt. Read by Peter Haydu. Credits continue. Associate Producer, Production Manager, Mark Huffin. First Assistant Director, Sergio Mimica Gazan. Second Assistant Director, Adam Goodman. Associate Producer, Kevin Delanoy. Sound Designer, Gary Rydstrom. Special Effects Supervisor, Neil Corbold. Special Effects Floor Supervisor, Clive Beard. Stunt Coordinator, Simon Crane. Supervising Art Director, Daniel T. Dorrance. Set Decorator, Lisa Dean Cavanaugh. Senior Military Advisor, Captain Dale Dye, USMC, retired. UK Casting by Priscilla John. The Cast. Tom Hanks as Captain Miller. Tom Sizemore as Sergeant Horvath. Edward Burns as Private Ryben. Barry Pepper as Private Jackson. Adam Goldberg as Private Mellish. Vin Diesel as Private Caparzo. Giovanni Ribisi as T-4 Medic Wade. Jeremy Davies as Corporal Upham. Matt Damon as Private Ryan. Ted Danson as Captain Hamill. Paul Giamatti as Sergeant Hill. Dennis Farina as Lieutenant Colonel Anderson. Jürg Stadler as Steamboat Willie. Maximilian Martini as Corporal Henderson. Dylan Bruno as Toynbee. Daniel Sercura as Weller. Dimitri Goritsas as Parker. Ian Porter as Trask. Gary Sefton as Rice. Julian Spencer as Garrity. Steve Griffin as Wilson. William Marsh as Lyle. Mark Cass as Fallon, Marcus Napier as Major Hess, Neil Finnegan and Peter Miles as Rommel paratroopers, Paul Major as HQ Major, Seamus McQuaid as Field HQ Aide, Ronald Longridge as Coxswain, Adam Shaw as Delancey, Rolf Saxon as Lieutenant Briggs, Corey Johnson as the radio man. Soldiers on the Beach, Lachlan Aiken, John Barnett, McLean Burke, Victor Burke, Aidan Condren, Pascal Friel, Shane Hagen, Paul Hickey, Shane Johnson, Laird McIntosh, Brian Maynard, Mark Phillips, Lee Rosen, Andrew Scott, Matthew Sharp, Vincent Walsh, and Graham Wood. John Charion as Corporal, Glenn Rage as Boyle, Crofton Hardister as Senior Medical Officer, Martin Hubb as Czech Wehrmacht Soldier, Raff Taylor as Goldman, Nigel Whitney as Private Boyd, Sam Ellis as Private Hastings, Eric Redman as German No. 1, Tylo Kiner as German No. 2, Stephen Grothgar as German No. 3, Voice on Bullhorn, Stephen Cornicard as Jean, Michelle Evans as Jean's wife, Martin Beaton as Jean's son, Anna McGuire as Jean's daughter, Nathan Fillion as Minnesota Ryan, Leland Orser as Lieutenant DeWind, Michael Mantis as Paratrooper Lieutenant, David Vey as Paratrooper Oliver, Ryan Hurst as Paratrooper Michelson, Nick Brooks as Paratrooper Joe, Sam Scudder as Paratrooper No. 1, John Walters as Old Frenchman, Dorothy Grumbar as Old Frenchwoman, James Innes Smith as MP Lieutenant, Harve Presnell as General Marshal, Brian Cranston and Dale Dye as War Department Colonels, David Wall as War Department Captain, Eric Lauren as War Department Lieutenant, Valerie Colgan as War Department Clerk, Amanda Boxer as Mrs. Margaret Ryan, Harrison Young as Ryan as Old Man, Kathleen Byron as Old Mrs. Ryan, Rob Freeman as Ryan's son, Thomas Gisbert as Ryan's grandson. Post-production sound services provided by Skywalker Sound, a division of Lucas Digital Limited. Special visual effects by Industrial Light and Magic, a division of Lucas Digital Limited. Songs. Solitude, written by Duke Ellington, Irving Mills, and Eddie DeLang. Tu es partout, written by Edith Piaf and Marguerite Monod. C'était une histoire d'amour, written by Henri Conté and Jean Jal, performed by Edith Piaf. Soundtrack available on DreamWorks Records. Filmed on location in England, Ireland, and France. Edited on the Moviola. Logos appear. Prints by Technicolor. Produced and distributed on Eastman Film. Filmed with Panavision cameras and lenses. Motion Picture Association of America, number 35942. This picture made under the jurisdiction of IATSE, affiliated with AFL-CIO. Dolby Digital, DTS Digital Sound, Sony Dynamic Digital Sound. Copyright 1998, DreamWorks LLC and Paramount Pictures Corporation and Amblin Entertainment Incorporated. DreamWorks LLC and Paramount Corporation are the authors and creators of this motion picture for purposes of the Berne Convention and all national laws giving effect thereto, and for purposes of copyright law in the United Kingdom. A Steven Spielberg film. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Distributed by DreamWorks Distribution, LLC. More logos. DreamWorks SKG. Paramount, a Viacom company. Amblin Entertainment.